ballots in your home, and give it to you. If it's not the best election you've ever heard, sit back and let them vote.
Call 800-369-6969. That's 1-800-313-6969. 1-800-313-6969.
Remember when you saw the homeless woman in the snow and you almost volunteered to work in a soup kitchen? Or when you saw the news report about wounded soldiers and you almost visited the Veterans Hospital? Or when you almost brought dinner to your neighbor with AIDS? Remember all those times you almost helped? You meant to, but somehow you forgot. You were too busy, and it slipped your mind. Well, it's only human, this almost giving. But if you almost gave, there's a good chance everybody else almost gave, too. Which means it's quite possible there was no soup kitchen at all, that no one visited those vets, and that your neighbor never got that hot meal. Because almost giving is the same as not giving at all. Don't almost give. Give. To find out how, visit our website at don'talmostgive.org. This message brought to you by the Ad Council.
Kirby Van Hirsch, you won't believe your eyes. At this thrill-a-minute production, packed full of astonishing disappearing acts, huge illusions, and exotic animals. See a royal white tiger, a unicorn, a helicopter appearing in 4 seconds flat, assistance cut in half, one-of-a-kind surprises, and more. Plus, take a magical mystery tour backstage with Kirby and his big cats. Kirby Van Hirsch, millions have been amazed. Now it's your turn. Kirby Van Hirsch Theater, Highway 248, Branson, Missouri, 417-337-7140.
Look at all the cars. Lots of colored cars. Now, there's a blue one. Isn't it pretty? Whew, look how fast that red one's going. It's red like that stop sign. Like my jacket.
This is a 38-year-old man.
My jacket's not a car, is it? Is my jacket a car? My jacket is red, but it doesn't go fast.
He may sound a little strange to you and me.
Vroom. Vroom, vroom.
But to his 2-year-old son, who's interested in cars and colors, he makes perfect sense.
That's the sound cars make.
When you talk with your child, you build vocabulary, and learning starts long before school does. So follow their lead. Take simple everyday moments, like eating dinner or just watching cars go by, and turn them into learning moments.
Ooh, look, red car!
Yes! That is moving awfully fast.
Blue car!
Yes! The man in the red car is about to meet the man in the blue car. Get himself a pretty pink ticket.
Turn everyday moments into learning moments. For more tips, go to bornlearning.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Ooh, I'm home.
This is your sofa speaking. I've been waiting for you all day.
Wait, hold on. I am being sweet talked by the couch?
That's right. Just sit down here on your comfy couch and don't move a muscle.
Mm.
Let's just sit and watch TV.
Oh, I really shouldn't.
Come in, let me give you some sugar. You still love chocolate, don't you?
Back off, couch man.
Dorothy?
I'm tired of what you're doing to my friend. Ayana, don't let him sweet talk you.
But baby...
That's enough from you. Let's go window shopping, girl. Like maybe for a new couch.
When temptation is calling, call on your sisters to provide you with the motivation and love you need. Eat right, get active, and reduce your risk of cancer, diabetes, heart disease, and stroke. Go for success with the power of sisterhood. For more information, go to everydaychoices.org. Brought to you by the American Cancer Society, the American Diabetes Association, the American Heart Association, the Ad Council, and the station.
Time now for another edition of the Wake Up Call with Liz Brown. Views expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or advertisers of WGNU Radio. This broadcast is a production of Norman Broadcasting Company, Incorporated, and WGNU Radio, and is intended solely for the information and entertainment of our listening audience. Any rebroadcast, transcribing, recording, or other use of this material without the expressed written consent of Norman Broadcasting Company, Incorporated, and WGNU Radio is strictly prohibited. We ask that you govern your calls within the bounds of brevity and good taste. And now, the wake-up call with Liz Brown.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air.
Our power. Please do not beg folks to
Somebody is going to give it to you. You were born with power.
The following is a best of the wake-up call. Liz Brown is out today. She will be back tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. So until then, enjoy this best of the wake-up call right here on AM 920 WGNU.
But the hard truth is that not everyone is sharing in this city's splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever, more families in trouble, more and more people who need help but can't find it. They struggle against the common enemies of man. Charity, poverty, disease, and war itself.
We believe that all men are created equal. Yet many are denied equal
treatment. And so we say to all in this nation who dare listen to us, black, white, Jew, Gentile, Asian, Latino, and we are brothers and sisters in a long and difficult struggle.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the Wake Up Call. This is Liz Brown, living my life as an African and loving it. 454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax, and my toll-free long-distance number is 1-877-920-WGNU. That's 1-877-920-WGNU. Well, we've had a full morning. We've talked about the faith-based money. We've talked about how Congress is addicted to porn, pornography money, that is. We've talked about the fact that it appears that our good government is holding Iraqi women hostage in order to get at some Iraqi men that they say are suspects in various and sundry crime acts. We also are coming off of a week where we had testimony by our new Attorney General, Alberto Gonzalez, about how we need to have more. The Patriot Act needs to be expanded. That it is cool for our government to be able to snoop into your library, your local library, and find out what books you've been reading, and then tell the library that they can't tell you that the government had been there. That it is great, good times, and an example of a responsible government, that we have secret courts, secret trials, and the inability to confront any of that with a lawyer or evidence. It's all good news coming from the mouth of Alberto Gonzalez. And while we should be very, 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 very concerned about what is happening on the Hill right now with the Patriot Act, there are some other 1984 type things that are going on as well. In Seattle, in Washington State, there's a new biometric payment system. A supermarket in Seattle has reported that many of its customers would rather have their fingerprints scanned than use cash and coins to pay for groceries. In other words, will that be cash, check, or fingerprint? To discuss the ramifications
of this practice in Washington State. I have joining me from Hawthorne, New Jersey, Andrew Gause, economic analyst and author. Andrew, good morning.
Good morning, Liz.
How are you?
Fabulous.
Outstanding. Outstanding. So, Andrew, should we be scared? Very, very, yes, very scared?
Absolutely. Run away. Run away. I'll tell you what. You remember in 1980, when Bill Clinton took office first time, first budget, these two Harvard professors came out and said that by the time a baby born there in Mr. Clinton's first year of his first term would pay 82% of their total income by the time they reached working age. And the whole country went absolutely wild over this. I remember people telling me, well, I just won't pay. I just won't pay. I'll work off the books or under the table or whatever I have to do. I'll get some side income. I won't pay 82% of my income in the form of taxes. I thought at the time that, 41% was slavery, but 80% most certainly would be slavery. And now, as you see, we move to an electronic monetary system where folks aren't allowed to store wealth privately. All your wealth is electronic, and you have to have a fingerprint to access it. So whether you're shopping or whether you're working, no matter what you're doing, you use biometrics to identify yourself, and then your account is accessed either to put money in for that day of work or take money out for whatever you've just purchased. Oh, and let's not forget taxes, because there's no way you're not going to pay. There's no way.
So what people are being seduced into, eased into, is a system that allows for the government to absolutely have 100% access at you.
That's right. Yeah, an electronic chain, I call it. You're chained up. And you, in order to work, of course, you'll need a Social Security number. Your Social Security number will access your bank account. Your bank account will be linked to you uniquely through your fingerprint or through your retina scan. And so every time you work, every time you spend a dollar, every time you do anything at all, not only will there be a record of it, but there is no way to escape our new friendly tax, the fair tax, which is going to be a tax on everything you buy, a consumption national sales tax, very easy to implement with an electronic monetary system, and absolutely the worst thing for this nation.
Well, some people would argue, what's wrong with that? What's wrong with being able to for the government to be able to make certain that it gets all of the money that that citizens owe?
Because it doesn't need that money. You know what? I can show you how to completely eliminate the income tax overnight. It's not a mystery. It's not rocket science. After all, it's not backed by gold anymore, is it?
Not that I know of.
All right, so doesn't it seem ludicrous that our Congress has to borrow $500 billion this year? Well, where's it going to get the $500 billion? Well, it's going to borrow it from Alan Greenspan and his associates. Well, where are they going to get it? Well, they're going to create it. Now, if Congress has the power to do a bond, then why doesn't it just do the money? But why does it have to pay someone else 6% or 4% annually to do what? To create money? What kind of absurdity is this? And even worse, on the other side of the equation, they make us put money aside for our retirement, and then they loan it to these very same individuals at, meager interest. That's why Social Security's in trouble, because they're only paying 1% to the Social Security Trust Fund. So what we have is this big web of financial mismanagement, and we need to start taking people and putting them in jail. And then we have no reason to have an income tax at all.
But here is my concern, Andrew.
Hmm.
All of the things that you say are in order to change the things that are in front of us.
Mm-hmm.
We have to have people out there that are willing to advocate for the change and insist that the change happen.
Well, you're right there.
And I believe that the fact that we have people in Seattle that are willing to hand out their fingerprint.
They're lining up to do it.
Well, okay, lining up to do that. The fact that we have people like that is really, don't you think, a result of decades of numbing people to what their responsibilities are. If we continue to make people, get people to believe that they have to sacrifice their constitutional rights on some kind of altar of law and order, at some point in time, you're going to have citizens that do line up for an eye scan and do line up for a fingerprint. So are we prepared to fight that battle that you're talking about that needs to be fought in order to make these changes?
I'm worshiping at that altar. You know, I have no trouble fighting this fight, and I have fought it for 25 years. It's my belief that if Americans understood the way the money system operates, then they would absolutely be, absolutely appalled. Completely appalled that we pay this group of private banks some $500 billion a year just to create and issue money, as though this is some type of an exclusive purview that, government can't do. We need to subcontract this out. And these guys don't let us look at the books. They don't pay income tax on their earnings. And my goodness, those profits are so enormous that they have an art collection that's worth almost $500 million. They have to employ a full-time guy just to keep up with all their paintings. So I don't you think it's time to bring a change about in the way that we issue money? And I think if we start there, then we can eliminate this electronic chain. There's no need, or there's no reason to fear, shall we say, a money system that doesn't have to continually inflate itself in order to pay off ultimately the bondholders, which in this case are folks that just don't have the best interest of the country at heart.
Well, and back to this, I'm just so intrigued with this practice that is going on in Seattle. One of the things that many Americans have articulated as a concern, mm-hmm. When they talk about government, is the idea that the government would somehow create a national ID card. And
they have.
And this helps with that, doesn't it?
They have created a national ID card. It's your social security number. In fact, and I'm not making this up, okay? This is the God's honest truth. Title 42, Section 666, requires every state government to link to every individual applying for any kind of a license a social security number. So if you're applying for a birth certificate, marriage license, driver's license, nurse's license, electrician's license, any kind of a state license, you have to provide your social security number or you cannot have that license. That's the law. Title 42, Section 666. Says, without that number, effectively, you don't work. You don't drive. You don't open a bank account. You don't do anything. So that is the number that links to the individual. Without the number, then the individual cannot merge into the system. So that is a national ID card. You don't need anything else.
Well, what's the difference between getting your finger scanned, your fingerprint checked, or compared, or your eye scanned, than having a debit card?
Well, I can use your debit card.
Well, I mean, from the perspective of opposition to this,
use your debit card.
So then we should be supporting this.
I don't think we should support this at all. In fact, I think we should take back our monetary system. The need for this type of legislation is all based on what the Federal Reserve banks do with their cash.
But if we back up, before we get to that discussion, my question is that what to the person that says, I want to use my debit card or I use my fingerprint. I don't understand why anybody's making a fuss over the fact that I'm going to use my fingerprint.
You're absolutely right in that regard. In fact, it's a very small step from the physical card to the fingerprint. The difference between the two is simply that you cannot put the debit card down and use something else. Obviously, you have other debit cards or other credit cards that might or might not be linked to you biometrically. Your fingerprint is. So you couldn't use, say, for example, a company credit card. Now, there are ways to maintain your privacy, for example, by opening offshore corporations, getting a Visa card in the name of the corporation, and then using it as an individual. the bank records being offshore would be exempt from the scrutiny of the Justice Department, any federal agency, and they wouldn't be linked to you individually, so you could have a means of conducting your affairs privately using a debit card or a credit card. Your fingerprint, your thumbprint, your retina scan, that's you. And there's no way that it'll ever be anyone else. And, you know, God help you if you don't pay a traffic fine or you get behind in some other. I remember as a young man not paying my taxes one year so that I could feed my family, knowing that I was going to have to pay a big penalty the following year, but not caring because to me it was worth it so that my family would be supported. Those choices won't be in the lives of kids of the future. They'll have no choice.
Well, and also, I guess it's a inexpensive way for, or not, maybe even not inexpensive, but it certainly is an efficient way for the government to begin to database your retina, your fingerprint.
The most efficient way, indeed. In fact, here in New Jersey, what they do, they give you a rebate each year. If you'll call into this automated system and identify your home, your address, link it to a Social Security number, so that now they know which piece of physical real estate is linked to which Social Security number. But once that's done, then it's a very small step to aggregating all of this data into a dossier, if you will, that, you know, any bureaucrat will be able to access without even putting down his donut. Whatever he wants to know about you or she will be easily accessible from their desktop.
We have to take a break. I'm talking to Andrew Goss, economic analyst and author, joining us from Hawthorne, New Jersey. We're talking about, will that be cash, check, or fingerprint, and the way the money operates in this country. Stay with me. I'm Liz Brown. This is The Wake Up Call. I'll be back after this break.
You're listening to the best of The Wake Up Call. Stick around for more following the traffic and new weather. That's up next. Morning, St. Louis, 33 minutes after the hour of 6 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton. Let's take a look at this hour's traffic and your weather. Eastbound 70 from K through 79, look for slow traffic there. Eastbound 5570 from 64 into the 203 extension, look for some delays as we've got paving operations going on. Eastbound 5570 from Poplar Street into the 64, look for one or two lanes to be closed during off-peak periods due to paving operations that will be going on for about the next month. Northbound 270 from 44 through Doherty Ferry, look for slow traffic there. Westbound 270 from Old Halls Ferry into Graham Hanley, you've got some slowdowns. Westbound 5570 from 3rd Street into the Poplar Street Bridge, look for slow traffic, especially in the left lanes. Westbound 64 from Bow Avenue into the 5570 split is rolling well, but everything's on the move. Westbound Kingbridge traffic's moving well in the landing at this hour. Eastbound 44 from east of Soccer Park all the way into 270, look for some slowdowns. Northbound 270 at 44 and at 70, look for no delays at this hour. Just come in. Northbound 55 between 143 and 140, that's over on the Illinois side. There's an accident at Illinois 140, so look for heavy volume going on there. That is a look at your traffic. Now let's take a look at your forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Thursday. For today, look forward to partly sunny skies in the morning, becoming mostly cloudy throughout the day. Chance of showers, high around 90. This evening, showers and thunderstorms likely, lows in the upper 60s. Wednesday, partly cloudy, highs in the lower 80s. And Thursday, partly cloudy with the highs in the mid-80s. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have 70 degrees. Lambert Field is reporting 72 and clouds. Stay tuned for more of the best of The Wake Up Call. Liz Brown is out today. She will be back on tomorrow at 6 a.m. Till then, enjoy more selections from the best of the Wake Up Call right here on AM 920 WGNU, your station for the issues that matter most to you.
Connect Care, still connected to the community. Sometimes it seems like things are changing so fast that it's hard to keep up and hard to keep track. At Connect Care, we want you to know that, yes, there have been some changes, and yes, we are still connected to the community. At Connect Care, we still have a retail pharmacy open 8 to 5 Monday through Friday. At Connect Care, we still provide transportation to patients that qualify. At Connect Care, we still provide access to in-house laboratory services. At Connect Care, we still provide some of the region's best board-certified doctors. At Connect Care, we still provide urgent care. And at Connect Care, we still see patients on a sliding fee scale. Yes, changes have been made at Connect Care, but we're still connected to you. Connect Care, still connected to the community.
I'm Phil Person of Person Roofing. We've been in business about 17 years, and we've advertised on WGNU almost that whole time. We have installed over 5,000 roofs in that period of time, and today I have a customer here. His name is Mr. Merriweather. Mr. Merriweather, I think we installed a roof on your house about 10 or 12 years ago.
Yes, you did.
Recently, you had a little storm damage on that roof, didn't you?
I sure did.
Can you tell what happened?
Yeah, Mr. Person come out and repaired my roof and didn't charge me anything.
And you haven't had any problems since we did a repair?
I sure haven't.
Even though your warranty was out, we still came out and took care of your roof.
Right.
We try to service our customers, and if you would like to have a new roof, call us at 361-7127. That's Person Roofing at 361-7127. All phases of roofing. Thank you.
Are you one of those people who look at somebody who's big boned and think that's just a euphemism for Twinkie enriched? Are you sick of the idea that we can go to war in Serbia and bomb the crud out of them, but we should stay out of Iraq? If the whole entire pop culture thing, Britney Spears, Super Bowl commercials, and all that stuff gets on your nerves, well, guess what? It gets on mine, too. So if you want someone to listen and understand, listen to me, Brett Rosen, every Tuesday, 10 a.m. on WGNU, 920 a.m.
This is the award-winning wake-up call with Liz Brown. Don't leave home without it.
We now take you back to the best of the wake-up call. Liz Brown is out. She will be back tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. in the studio. Until then, more of the best of the wake-up call right here on AM 920 WGNU.
Welcome back to the wake-up call. This is Liz Brown living my life as an African and loving it. 454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. We are talking to Andrew Goss, economic analyst and author, joining us from Hawthorne, New Jersey. We're talking about amongst other things, will that be cash, check, or fingerprint? And also, Andrew, I have in front of me your book, Uncle Sam Cooks the Books.
That's right.
And we have about 10 minutes or so.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to, if you could, kind of sum up why we should be concerned about how the government counts our money, and what the government does with the money. I love the one chapter on the Native Americans and
sure.
what happened to their money.
Mm-hmm.
So talk to us a little bit about that.
Well, you know, the classic banker ploy, and you need an old-timer to explain it to you. If you're a youngster out there, you know, find yourself a wise person in their 70s, 80s maybe. Sit them down and say, well, you know, tell me about a time when money had substance, when it was something, where a dollar was defined as something, 0.7734 ounces of silver or 1/20th of an ounce of gold. See, then you knew what a dollar was, and when somebody was holding a dollar for you, you know that you got back the same dollar that you loaned them or asked them to store in the case of a bank or in the case of our friendly, benevolent government who's holding dollars for each and every one of us in the form of Social Security or other entitlements, retirement of some sort. So the key to knowing what a dollar is in terms of a measured unit is so important. It's so important I can't emphasize it enough, because if you can affect the value of dollars simply by increasing their supply. So by not telling us what a dollar is, the federal government, through the banking system, the Federal Reserve banks, have swindled an entire generation of untold sums of money and will continue to do so until we as Americans get a handle on what a dollar is. Otherwise, you're storing these things up in the banking system called dollars, and they continually, through sleight of hand, inflate the total supply without your knowledge and double book, report the same dollars twice, and also double enter, take the same dollars from two different places, borrow your money or ask you to put money away in the form of a trust fund, say to fix our roads, 30 cents a gallon at the pump, put the money in a trust fund, and then instead of spending the money to fix the road, they loan it to the very same people that own the Federal Reserve banks. Now, Americans should be absolutely appalled, but because they don't understand what a dollar is, they cannot get a handle on what's being done to them. So when you look in the Social Security Trust Fund, I see a $2.6 trillion surplus. But Mr. Rangel, Charles Rangel, says, oh, well, this is good, solid Treasury money. Okay, great. Let's drag it out and spend it and stop talking about the Social Security problem. Well, we can't. Why? Well, because we borrowed it, and we can't pay it back. That's the real problem, see? It's not that we've got some looming crisis that we can't deal with. We borrowed the money and can't pay it back. The only way we can pay it back is by raising taxes to 82%. So what are we going to do? We need to reform the system. Yeah, you bet we do. We need to drag out the people that made us put away $2.6 trillion and then borrowed it and spent it on other things and now can't pay it back. Those people should go to jail. They breached their fiduciary responsibility. They should go to jail.
Well, let's talk about the breach of a fiduciary duty. Let's talk about the trust funds.
Sure. 1986, Alan Greenspan was chairman of the Greenspan Commission. He came to us and said, oh, around 2008, you're going to have a crisis in Social Security. So what you need to do is double payroll taxes. You need to make Americans take twice as much money, and America's employers, twice as much money out of their checks and put it aside. And we did. And all throughout that period, from 1986 until the present, every single administration, every single congressman and senator has borrowed or consented to borrowing the money in order to report a smaller budget deficit each year. In fact, Mr. Clinton relished in the fact that he had a zero budget deficit. Well, yeah, he took all the money out of Social Security Trust Fund and left unredeemable IOUs. They're called non-marketable government securities. That's what I found in every one of these funds. So while I look at the Federal Reserve and they have a certain ledger of registered treasury bonds, treasury bills, and treasury notes that the entire marketplace knows about, unbeknownst to them and to most Americans, there is an entire pile of unregistered, non-marketable government securities that are contained within the government trust funds. It's the reason why they cannot spend the money that's in the Social Security Trust Fund, because they do not have the tax revenues to redeem those funds. So you know what they're going to do instead? And this is the crime of it all, is they're going to allow the Federal Reserve to create another trillion or so dollars, and then they're going to borrow it from them at interest. The insanity of this, it's so beyond me that I could teach an eighth grader why this is bad. It's like having, you know, a big pile of money, having the right and the unlimited power to create money, giving that power to your friend, and then letting your friend create the money and borrowing it from him. That's so absurd.
And then paying.
And paying interest. Mm-hmm. That's the worst part of it all, because, you know, we gathered up from America's hardworking people. You don't tax your children. But we gathered from America's hardest working people $800 billion last year in income tax. Over half of that money.
And that's hard money.
Hard money. You know, we earned by the sweat of our brow each week, taken out of our check and sent directly to Washington. That money, half of it, is given to the Federal Reserve for interest on this money that they create. my whole question revolves around this simple expedient. If Congress has the power to issue a bond, then doesn't it have the power to issue the money? And if it does, then why has it subcontracted this entire operation to a privately owned bank headed by an unelected official named Alan Greenspan for the moment? So, you know, you have an entire cartel there that is conducting legalized monopoly. Otherwise, you know what? I'd rather have a Liz note. Instead of a Federal Reserve note, give me a Liz note. My friend Tony Brown and I in New York City in the early 90s came up with a freedom currency that was community-based, that you would, you know, you would accept it, I would issue it, you would accept it, you would issue it, I would accept it. So if you, whatever service you provided, I could get with your note, and whatever service I provided, you could get with mine. We called them freedoms. It was a local area currency in New York City that, you know, had it not been taxed, it might have been successful. But, you know, the IRS said, oh, no, you can't do that. Oh, no, you can't compete with the Federal Reserve. Mm. In fact, if you read Mr. Brown's book, Black Lies, White Lies, and Empower the People, you'll find an absolute explanation of this entire phenomenon that has put a generation into slavery. And that's effectively what has happened now. With this electronic money system, we will now make the full circle to slavery because, you know, there's no way to escape. And you get up, you go to work in the morning, you know, whatever you earn is going to be taxed.
Now, in terms of, I'd like to point out another way that, another story that illustrates how this government deals with money is, let's talk about the Native Americans and the money that our government was supposed to be watching and being the fiscal officers over.
Right, the Trail of Tears,
exactly.
Right? I mean, this is the saddest story of a way to treat a people, you know, what we did. And it's we because these people are acting in our names.
Mm-hmm.
They swindled an entire nation. Is what they've done.
And what I think is really, really just if you really want to get a sense and the feel of the reason for this swindle and the contempt behind it is, you know, when the Native Americans went to them, they said, okay, yeah, we swindled your money.
Yes.
You
so
know,
what?
So what?
Sue us.
Sue us.
And so they did. So they sue them. And I love this part. Federal judges holding interior secretaries in contempt. And saying to them, I mean, the quotes that I used in my book are the best way that I could tell it. You know, when a federal judge says to the head of a federal agency, you know, this is contempt. You figure out what you owe these people and pay them now. And the federal official's going, well, we don't know. We stole so much, we can't even count it all.
And I want to read the quote. I have never seen such a concerted effort to subvert the truth-seeking function of a judicial process.
Yeah, you know, like they're lying to the judge. Oh, no, we owe the books, so yeah, we got those over here.
And let's talk about how much money we're talking about that our government owes the Native Americans.
They don't know. Who knows? Nobody knows. Billions, tens of billions. You know what?
But the trust fund generated $500 million a year in revenue.
Yeah.
Okay? And how long have we been accruing that money?
You know, like forever. From the beginning, they never gave them any. I mean, they didn't give them anything relative to what they should have gotten, the Native American people. Nothing.
And the other piece of it, okay, the money was owed. The money was supposed to be accumulated. Our government took it because they were holding it in trust for the Native Americans. The Native Americans said, you know, give me my dang money. And the government said, what money?
Right.
They sued a $10 billion lawsuit. They won, and they still don't have any money.
Because they were not paying you. Okay, so you won.
Yeah, we took it, we lost it, but we're still not giving it to you.
Yeah, and you know what? Their children are, like, uneducated, or, you know, no offense to you if you're Native out there. Hey, you should have been. I mean, there's enough to send every one of those kids to Harvard, for goodness sake.
Or build their own doggone university. Absolutely. and educate their own.
And build their own houses and take care of their people. Instead, they kept them in abject poverty.
And stole the money.
It's sinful. Somebody needs to go to jail.
Mm.
You know what? The Declaration of Independence, what do they call it? A long train of abuses. You know, it's like when you pile abuse on abuse on abuse and you just keep heaping it up. Then eventually it becomes the duty of the people to throw off this yoke, to stand up and say, that is enough. And we can start by taking back the very root of our sovereignty, and that's our money system, The Constitution is so clear here that I don't see how it could be misinterpreted when it says, no state shall make anything but gold and silver coin a tender in payment of debt. That's not an amendment. That is the body of the Constitution. Now, I know here in New Jersey, they have us convinced that the right to bear arms means you can wear a short-sleeved shirt.
Mm.
But I don't see how you could misinterpret that gold clause. That's pretty clear.
And we have to take a break. When we come back, I want to talk about an article that you wrote, debt as a blessing?
Oh, yes, yes.
Debt is a blessing. Okay, we're going to be back. My name is Liz Brown. I'm talking to economic analyst and author Andrew Gause. He's joining us from Hawthorne, New Jersey. I'm Liz Brown. This is The Wake-Up Call. Stay with us. We've got much, 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 much more.
You are listening to the best of The Wake-Up Call right here on AM 920 WGNU. More to come.
School or nonprofit organization holding an upcoming event, or does it have an ongoing program? We can help you get the word out free of charge here at WGNU. Just send a flyer or written information to WGNU Radio Public Service Department, 265 Union Boulevard, St. Louis, Missouri 63108. We ask 2 weeks lead time for any upcoming event. WGNU reserves the right to edit or reject any submission due to content and time considerations.
People, have you heard about Golden Grocer Natural Market? It's locally owned and operated for over 30 years and serving and meeting your health needs by ensuring the best quality and selection in vitamin supplements and organic groceries. Golden Grocer Natural Market has the largest loose herb selection around. You can also get your grains and natural beauty items as well. Their staff is friendly, knowledgeable, and committed to helping you on your journey to improved and enhanced health. Golden Grocer believes that the healthiest goal is achieving balance in every area of your life. So, live your life like it's golden, and let Golden Grocer help you along the way. Golden Grocer, Natural Market, 335 North Euclid, right there in the Central West End. Open 10 a.m. to 7 p.m., Monday through Saturday, and Sunday 12 to 5. Golden Grocer, 367-0405. That's 367-0405.
Hello, I'm John Womack. I have a new show on WGNU called On the Table. Some of the things we'll talk about will be restaurants, food and wine trends, recipes, but really, we're just trying to help you experience great food and wine, whether you're at home or out on the town. So if you love great food and wine, you'll love On the Table. Be listening every Tuesday at noon here on WGNU.
Starting your day with information you can't get anywhere else. It's the award-winning Wake-Up Call with Liz Brown.
Liz Brown is out today. She will be back first thing in the morning tomorrow morning. So until then, we're bringing you more of the best of the Wake-Up Call right here on AM 920 WGNU.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the Wake Up Call. This is Liz Brown, living my life as an African and loving it. I am talking to Andrew Gause, economic analyst and author, joining us from Hawthorne, New Jersey. And Andrew, debt is a blessing?
Absolutely.
Talk to us about
that. Well, you know, the general consensus, first of all, understand that my premise is this, that the Federal Reserve is cooking the books, that they're issuing more notes than they have gold and silver money to back it up. And that was always the caveat that they had to follow. By 1980, they had issued their first $1 trillion. By 2000, that number had ballooned to $4 trillion. And now in 2005, it's $9 trillion. The more they create dollars, the more things become worth. Things, tangible things, like oil, like real estate, like gold, like food. So the concept is, whoever borrows the money first and buys the tangible asset wins. And whoever saves their money, doesn't spend it, pays off their debt, and lives debt-free, they lose. You see? their money becomes worth less. The money that they save each day is worth less than it was the day before. The debt that they're paying off, which could be used as leverage to acquire real tangible assets, someone else is creating a debt and buying a real tangible asset, making it worse. Mm. So every year goes by, your money's worth less. And the assets that you own, if you haven't gone into debt to buy them, let's assume you never go into debt to buy a house. My goodness, that's the... For Americans, I don't care if you have to go eat peanut butter for a year. Buy a house immediately. If you have to borrow every nickel to do it, immediately do it. Don't wait another minute. Because what happens is as time goes forward, it takes more and more of these dollars to buy the same piece of real estate or the same piece of gold or the same piece of oil. And so it is built into the system. It is such a fraud that the only choice that these folks have is A, reveal the fraud to the American people. Go ahead and divvy up, if you will. You know, there's 105 million ounces of gold. There's $9 trillion. Divvy it up. They cannot do that. They would reveal the extent of the fraud. So what they're going to do instead is create another $5 to $7 trillion in the next 5 years and then use that money to pay off these Social Security recipients that are retiring and the deficits that the administrations are running. So each year, whatever they spend extra, they'll create the money, put it into circulation. Whatever they need to pay Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, they create that money, put it into circulation. This will make money worth less. It will make property worth more. And debt will be a blessing because, you know, you borrow $100,000 today, you buy that house. 10 years from now, the house is worth $300,000 or $500,000, and you're paying off the $100,000 that you borrowed with dollars that are much easier to come by. And you must admit, you know, the average person making money today, you go to a typical wage earner at $7 or $8 even, and you go back in a time machine to 1967 and say, hey, in 2004, you're going to be making $7 an hour. I bet people would think they could be rich.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 1967 person's going, wow, $7 an hour, holy cow, my rent's only $100 a month.
Yeah, what
and
is
I get
that?
A new car for $3,000.
There you go.
Yep.
There you go.
So that's why debt can be a blessing. In 5, 10 years from now, 20 years from now, when kids are earning, you know, $80 an hour and paying $40 for a Starbucks, we'll think they're crazy. We'll sound like old fogies.
Mm.
Oh, when I was a kid, you could get a cup of coffee for $6.
For $6.
And you go to the movies for $10.
There you go.
And we hear it now from Grandma and Grandpa.
You've been listening to the best of the wake-up call right here on AM 920 WGNU. Stick around for more following the ABC News, your local news, traffic, and weather. This is AM 920 WGNU.
It is time for us to use our power. Please do not beg folks for power. Nobody is going to give it to you. You were born with power.
Some very sad news for all of you. The people who love peace all over the world. Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis. Never say that progress is being made. If you stick a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. You pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that's below me.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell me, brothers, help me, sisters.
But the hard truth is that not everyone is sharing in this city's splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever, more families in trouble, more and more people who need help but can't find it.
A struggle against the common enemies of man, tyranny, poverty, disease, and war itself.
We believe that all men are created equal, yet many are denied equal
treatment. So we say to all in this nation who dare listen to us, black, white, Jew, Gentile,
Asian, Latino, that we are brothers and sisters in a long and difficult struggle.
For the issues that matter most, it's AM 920 WGNU, Granite City, St. Louis.
Here's the latest from ABC News. I'm Karen Chase. The Iraq war is on the front burner and Congress is turning up the heat. A progress report is due out later this week that's likely to conclude very little progress is being made. Meanwhile, more and more Republicans are joining Democrats in a call for a withdrawal. ABC's T.J. Winnick says the White House is taking notice.
A senior White House official told ABC News Monday they are in panic mode. David Gergen has worked for both Republican and Democratic presidents.
I can't stress enough how important it is. When your own party breaks ranks for a president, that usually spells the end. You can't sustain a policy when your own party moves away from you.
Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid concedes Democrats are under a great deal of pressure as well. Many of their constituents believe they have not done enough to bring the troops home.
President Bush is expected to be peppered with questions about Iraq when he appears at a community forum in Cleveland where he had hoped to focus on his domestic agenda. She's got his number. Louisiana Senator David Vitter is apologizing for a serious sin after his phone number turned up in the so-called D.C. Madam's escort service business records. More from ABC's Jake Tapper.
We all stand here on the floor of the Senate.
Vitter has honed his conservative credentials during 8 years on Capitol Hill, the last three as a senator who claimed to represent, quote, mainstream Louisiana values. Last night, the married father of four admitted that his phone number appeared among those associated with an escort service operated by alleged D.C. Madam Deborah Jean Palfrey.
Vitter says he's already been forgiven by God and his wife. Sprint Nextel is offering no apologies for firing some of its crankiest customers. It dropped about 1,000 people who called customer service too often asking the same questions. However, they did waive the termination fee. When you're driving, look out for the other guy, especially if it's a teen. An alarming percentage, nearly 50% of teens, admit they send text messages while driving. 51% talk on cell phones. This is ABC News.
Will you love me when I turn six?
Of course I will love you when you're six.
Will you love me when I'm 10?
Of course I will love you when you're 10.
They'll always be your baby, which is why we've introduced the sedan rated the safest full-size car in America, the all-new 2008 Ford Taurus.
When I'm 15?
And while you can't engineer a mother's love, you can engineer safety. Taurus offers six standard airbags and features patented space architecture, which directs crash energy away from you. Plus, Taurus received five-star crash test safety ratings for front and side impacts and is an IIHS top safety pick.
Will you love me when I'm as old as you?
I will love you forever.
The all-new Ford Taurus. Ford. Bold moves. Visit your Ford dealer or go to FordVehicles.com.
Based on NHTSA five-star frontal and side crash test rating and IIHS top safety pick with optional electronic stability control. Class is standard five-passenger large cars.
The success of the Harry Potter movies has been set in cement. ABC's Dave Alpert explains.
Dan Radcliffe, Rupert Grint, Emma Watson.
The Harry Potter stars left their hand, foot, and wand prints outside Growlin's Chinese Theater.
I cannot believe I'm here. This is amazing.
This is just so incredible.
Daniel Radcliffe, who plays Harry, thanked the crowd.
Thank you for letting us do this, everybody.
The new Harry Potter movie opens Wednesday, and the final Harry Potter book arrives in stores next week. Dave Alpert, ABC News, Hollywood.
This one may evoke the question, which came first, the depression or the insomnia? But scientists suspect sleeplessness could be a symptom of depression or anxiety. A study found those who are chronically sleepless were more likely to suffer from depression and anxiety. If you said you'd get around to something when it snowed in Argentina, you just lost your excuse. Buenos Aires is frosted with snow, the first major snowfall since 1918. I'm Karen Chase, ABC News.
Now, the local report from the WGNU Newsroom.
Good morning, St. Louis. This is Patrick Bryant-Meyer with your WGNU News update for the 7 o'clock hour. In the news this Tuesday, police are looking for a person of interest in connection with a theft last month. The Frontenac Police Department has released surveillance video of a man who used stolen credit cards. The cards were inside a Lexus SUV that was stolen last month in Creveport. Earlier that day, police say a piece of jewelry was stolen from the Plaza Frontenac shopping mall. Anyone with information about the thefts is asked to call Frontenac Police at 314-994-9300. Two people are injured after a drive-by shooting in East St. Louis. It took place early yesterday morning outside the Broadway Market near the intersection of 15th Street and Broadway. A 24-year-old Cahokia woman was reportedly shot in the face. An unidentified man was also shot in the leg or foot. Investigators are searching for clues about the incident. An East St. Louis police assistant says the victims were standing outside the drive-up window when the shots were fired. Their injuries are not considered life-threatening. Finally this hour, Albert Pujols and Tony La Russa will see some familiar faces on the other team at the All-Star Game. Pujols' longtime friend Placido Polanco will make the start for the American League at second base. Polanco played for the Cardinals for several years until being traded in 2002 in the deal that brought Scott Rowland to St. Louis. Dan Heron of the Oakland A's will be the starting pitcher for the AL. He played for the Redbirds before being traded to Oakland in the move that brought Mark Mulder to the Gateway City. That's your look at local news for the 7 o'clock hour. I'm Patrick Brandmeier, bringing you the news that matters most to you.
Good morning, St. Louis. 6 minutes after the hour, 7 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton. Let's take a look at this hour's traffic and weather. Westbound 270 between 367 and West Florissant, look for slow traffic. Northbound 270 at Gravois and Doherty Ferry, you can expect delays. Westbound 5570 from 3rd Street into the Poplar Street Bridge, look for slow traffic in the left lane. Eastbound 70 from K through 79, look for slow traffic. Eastbound 5570 from 64 all the way into 203, look for paving operations going on there. Eastbound 5570 from Poplar Street through 64, look for one or two lanes may be closed during off-peak periods due to paving operations. There'll still be machinery out there, so just use caution. Slow down. Eastbound 44 from Soccer Park to 270 North, look for slow traffic there. Northbound Illinois Route 3, that ramp onto the Poplar Street Bridge is slow at the top of that ramp. Westbound Kingbridge traffic into the bank, from the bank into the landing, look for slow traffic there as well. Westbound 5570 from Route 3 into the Chain of Rocks Bridge, look for slow traffic going on there. Southbound 55 between 61 and St. Genevieve, look for an accident that's been cleared at mile marker 168. Northbound 55 between 143 and 140 over on the Illinois side, look for an accident that's cleared at 140. Expect traffic to be easing now. Southbound 270 from 70 in Dorset, look for slowdowns. And eastbound 70 approaching 270 from St. Charles Rock Road, look for some slowdowns there as well. That is a look at your traffic. Now let's take a look at your forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Thursday. For today, partly sunny this morning, becoming mostly cloudy this afternoon. 50% chance of showers with a high around 90. This evening, showers and thunderstorms are likely with a low in the upper 60s. For Wednesday, partly cloudy, high in the lower 80s. Wednesday evening, partly cloudy, low in the mid-60s. Then on Thursday, partly cloudy skies with a high in the mid-80s. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have clouds and 70 degrees. Lambert Field is reporting 73. Stay tuned for more of the best of the wake-up call. That's up next. Liz Brown is out today. She will be in tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. Until then, we're going to bring you more of the best of the wake-up call. We'll take another look at your traffic and weather in the bottom of the 7 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU, your station for the issues that matter most to you.
I'm hearing revolution in the air, air.
Nobody is going to give it to you. You were born with power.
you, for all of you, the people who love peace all over the world. Martin Luther King was shot and was
killed. We now bring you the best of the wake-up call right here on AM 920 WGNU.
The people who love peace all over the world. Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis. I will never say the progress that you made. If you took a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. If you pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that's below me.
But the hard truth is that not everyone is sharing in this city's splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever, more families in trouble, more and more people who need help but can't find it. A struggle against the common enemies of man, tyranny, poverty, disease, and war itself.
We believe that all men are created equal, yet many are denied equal treatment.
And so we say to all in this nation who dare listen to us, black, white, Jew, Gentile, Asian, Latino, that we are brothers and sisters in a long and difficult struggle.
Welcome to this week's edition of Looking Black, a review of issues that have impacted your life this week and where they may take us next, from differing perspectives. Here's Liz Brown and our guest journalists for this week.
Welcome to Looking Black. This morning we have a brand new member of our Looking Black family joining us from New York City, Margaret Kimberly, freedom writer for theblackcommentator.com. Margaret, good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you so much for having me on.
It's my pleasure. So, what caught your eye last week? What you looking at?
Well, let's see, debt, slavery, and a new pope. But I don't know. I'll start with the bankruptcy bill.
Okay.
Which is an absolute disaster for the average American. It is now the case that credit cards and companies and others who give us debt without any restriction now are able to keep us indebted for the rest of our lives. We no longer have the right to file for bankruptcy. Child support can be considered income that can be used to pay back debt, if you can imagine that. Women depending on child support to survive will have to use that. If they choose to file bankruptcy, would have to use that to help pay back debts. There are no restrictions on credit card companies at all. Attempts by members of Congress to make exception for people who file bankruptcy because of medical expenses, which create half of all bankruptcies in the country. Those amendments were defeated. There were amendments to make exceptions for those who filed bankruptcy, who are serving overseas in the military, those who support the troops, by the way, fought those amendments. There were efforts to restrict the abilities of credit card companies to offer us credit. Of course, those were turned back. So I keep getting these unsolicited credit offers in the mail. If the American people are such deadbeats, I don't know why we're always offered credit. I don't know why college students who have no income are sometimes given $5,000 and $10,000 lines of credit.
Well, now we know, because they're going to have to pay those back.
Exactly.
And also, I mean, there's just a white market, if you will, of by the credit card companies of pursuing people that were never pursued 10, 15, 20, 30, 40 years ago.
Exactly.
Poor people. Yes. Why do they pursue poor people? Because they can charge 30% interest. And then all these fees on top of that. And then they can make people who can't pay this stuff back that they never should have gotten to begin with.
Exactly.
And then you create a society that is dependent upon what you can't get a hotel room if you don't have a credit card.
You can't get a hotel. You can't rent a car. You can't buy a plane ticket.
So you got to have one.
You have to have credit. Exactly. And I guess at the time now is we've become so addicted to it, unfortunately. But I think personally, I've made a decision, having made those mistakes in my youth with easy credit. But I think we have to say, okay, well, that's it for us then.
And
I'm only keeping, if I have to have a credit card, I'll have a credit card.
I'm not going to put too much on it. And the debit cards are really wonderful. I just use my debit card. If I can't pay for it in cash, I've got a card that looks like a card. I can, you know, I can do all of that stuff. And I'm not going to get caught up in that stuff anymore. But one of the other things, Margaret, I think that is people don't always connect to the bankruptcy issue, the credit card issue, is the fact that people are refinancing their homes not to put kids through school, not to build on their homes and create a bigger asset, not to create a cushion for them in their retirement years, but they're refinancing their home to pay back credit card debt.
Exactly.
That's horrible.
Oh, it is, absolutely, and it creates great instability. We have this housing bubble, which it seems is a tough bubble. I don't know when it's going to burst, but with the values of homes rising and with refinancing rates so low, that's now my number one spam I receive, is about mortgage information.
Absolutely.
And refinancing.
Mm-hmm.
But people are doing this exactly not to help themselves financially, but to get themselves out of a hole they've dug for themselves.
And thereby creating another hole.
Creating another hole. And this home, which is the best asset that most of us have, that's the only asset most people have, really, is now in trouble. And so now we have even greater instability for the average working person.
Absolutely. And the thing that we don't have that was here 20 years ago, 30 years ago, 40 years ago, are savings. People don't have savings.
No, well, one reason people don't have savings is that wages aren't going up.
Mm.
Wages have been stagnant for years now. Mm. So you have people whose income really hasn't risen very much, if at all. Employment, that is, there's more part-time work and temp work, people who don't have benefits of any kind, housing prices that go up, a greater percentage of income being used to put a roof over your head, maybe just rent, not even something that you own. So all of these things work together to create a terrible situation for the average American. So who can save? I mean, here in New York, there was a statistic last week that many New Yorkers are spending up to two-thirds of their income on housing.
Two,
so how are you going to save?
Two-thirds
of their income on a house. Well, not even a house, a place, an apartment, something to on shelter. So now you have a situation where people, how can you save if that much of your income is going? Now, New York is a little unique where we have very high housing costs, but I think it's symbolic of what's happening across the country. So no, nobody is saving anything, and we are constantly being exhorted to go into debt. If it's not the credit card offers, I have several times received checks in the mail from Household Finance and other companies like that saying, you've been pre-approved, here is a check for $3,000, for $4,000. Of course, the fine print is the interest is 25%, so of course I ripped them up and threw them away, but things like that all conspire to keep us in the hole, and to keep us from having any savings whatsoever.
Well, let's move on to your other issue. Joey Ratz, our new pope.
Yeah. Joey Ratz, that's his name. Yes, the Hitler Youth Pope.
There we go.
I find it astounding after it was a really ghoulish, I felt, the way the prior pope's illness and funeral was covered.
Let's just say it, okay?
It was. It was horrible. It was when he was ill, it was, well, today he has a fever. No, his fever went down. His nose is running. No, not anymore. Then when they kept propping him up at the window, I just thought it was disrespectful. I said, can you let the man rest?
Okay.
He's ill. He's in his 80s. His kidneys are failing. Let him go to bed. But that went on and on for weeks, and then those last couple of days, there were reports that he had died. The New York Archdiocese, in fact, falsely reported that the man had passed away when he hadn't.
Stop
they
it.
Sent out a spokesman. Oh, yes, they sent out a spokesman. The Pope has passed.
And yeah, they're like, no, no, I'm not.
And
oh,
like
my God.
15 minutes later, the poor man rushes out again. Sorry, we
Oh, no, they didn't.
And then after he passed away, and, you know, it's been a long time since we've seen a Pope's funeral, but it was just over the top. The amount of news coverage, politicians in New York were elbowing each other to go to the funeral. Everyone from dog catcher on up said, no, I must go to Rome to the Pope's funeral.
And check it out. On the ticker across Fox News Network, when when Joey Ratz was selected as Pope, said, we have a new Pope. Huh?
Who's we?
Who's the we?
Who is we? I mean, even
who's
if you're Catholic, that's not an appropriate thing.
Who's the we?
But that tells you how what the last couple of popes have meant, frankly, to the right wing.
And particularly this Pope.
Oh, absolutely. This is the man who had, well, they don't call it the Inquisition anymore, but it was called the Council of Doctrine of Faith, something along those lines. But it was the Inquisition. This is a man who a few years ago said in a letter that Christians who were not Roman Catholic were deficient. So if you're a Quaker, Lutheran, Presbyterian, Baptist, Methodist, or whatever, your Christianity is somewhat deficient because you're not Roman Catholic. This is a man who said that gay people have brought violence on themselves.
Mm.
This is a man that said the pedophile scandal was an attempt by the American media to attack the church.
Mm.
I could go on and on. We know he's German. I was joking to someone yesterday, if you're going to pick a German for a position, it should be somebody younger than 60.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have these issues of what he did during the war.
Exactly.
But we keep being told, at that time kids had to join the Hitler Youth. They had to, and that's okay, that could be. But he was in the German army. He was briefly a prisoner of war for the U.S. in the U.S. Army, a prisoner of war camp. But you're not supposed to say he's a not, you say that, he was forced to, but we don't know that.
And we don't have the evidence of that.
We don't. We have no, we're told, his parents were against the Nazis. How do we know?
What's the proof of that?
They could have been frightened into, they could have said, son, you got to join the Hitler Youth, everybody else does, mommy and dad will get in trouble if you don't. It could have been that, but we have no way of knowing.
And I guess what we have to do, Margaret, is to look at the things that an individual advocates throughout the course of his 78 years here on planet Earth. And it seems to me the advocacy articulated by Joey Ratz here that gay people, that it makes sense that civil liberties be restricted to people based upon their sexual orientation, that seems very Hitler-esque. Does it not?
Absolutely. So the Catholic Church has gone from having popes who were Nazi apologists to having a pope who was in fact a Nazi. I mean, I'm sorry, the choice could not have been worse, but it's in keeping with the direction that the church has gone in, and that's why Fox News calls him our Pope.
Our Pope. And then I was looking at an article today from the France Press,
mm-hmm.
and I didn't read this in Reuters, I didn't read this in AP, I didn't read this in the New York Times. New Pope intervened against Kerry in the U.S. 2004 election.
He most certainly did. How could I leave that out? He is the one who said Catholic politicians who are pro-choice on abortion should not be able to receive communion. And that, in effect, it's so funny. We've gone a long way. When Kennedy ran for president back in 1960, he was in great pains to say, because I'm Roman Catholic, I will not be subservient to the Catholic Church.
And that was a big issue back then.
It was.
That
was
a huge
issue.
People were concerned that the United States, that government would be controlled by the Vatican.
Exactly. So now we have a government controlled by the Vatican, but the government's run by Protestant evangelicals who are controlled by the Vatican.
We have a new pope.
We have a new pope. How about that? Yes, he did. And he is responsible, and of course, the media in this country went along with emphasizing that Kerry, somehow questioning Kerry's religious belief, saying that he was not a good Catholic, that he was not a good Christian in effect, whereas Bush, the great murderer, is. I love that. Bush has quite skillfully and shrewdly discussed religion in such a way that he is, it is just accepted that he's a good Christian. It doesn't seem to matter what he does or what atrocities he carries out. He speaks the lingo.
Well, and Margaret, help me with this because, I'm the first to admit that I don't know everything. But George Bush went to Pope John Paul's funeral, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes, he did.
You're a reporter out there. You're a writer for blackcommentator.com. Mm-hmm. Have you covered any stories of Bush attending any of the funerals of our boys or girls that were killed in Iraq?
Oh, well, he's attended none.
Well, then.
And, in fact, they won't even allow the press to cover the coffins coming home. There are no photographs allowed of the flag-draped coffins of the, now I think, I believe it's 1,600 mm-hmm. American, military personnel who've been killed in the occupation of Iraq. And not only did he go to Rome, but they pretty much kept Jimmy Carter from going because they wanted to bring his chief of staff. I mean, there was this picture of, I said to myself, you know, this was a perfect time for God to get him. I shouldn't question the Almighty, but there was this photograph of the President and the First Lady and Condi Rice and Bill Clinton and Andrew Card all praying near the body of the Pope. And I said to myself, what a bunch of godless hypocrites. And Andrew Card, the President's chief of staff, well, you know, and that's a mini scandal that former presidents are usually invited to when there's a presidential trip of that nature. But Jimmy Carter was sort of discouraged from saying yes, and they said, well, you don't really have to go. So, you know, he got the hint and said, all right, I won't go. So the President's chief of staff gets to be in the picture and gets to be near the Pope's body. It was just awful.
But then, you know, I was looking at that same picture, and the thought of godlessness did not go through my mind. The thought, when I was looking at George sitting next to his dad and sitting next to his wife, they just looked unfamiliar with the practice of praying. They didn't look very comfortable. It, you know, it's like George had like one eye open type of thing. You know,
yes,
it was strange.
You know what it is? I think a guilty conscience needs no accuser.
There you go.
I think you are. You know you're a godless dog. You know you don't ever. He doesn't go to church. For all of his talk about Jesus changing his life, for all his placating evangelicals, he doesn't go to church. That man never prays. He doesn't. He couldn't stand it. He couldn't stand to sit and be alone and with his thoughts like that.
Well, and the other piece of it is for me is that when we're looking at this whole piece of the Pope and the Pope's direction to intervene in Kerry's election, but Ratzinger didn't intervene with Bush by saying, well, you support the death penalty.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the Catholic Church policies is officially the, and one thing I do give, I was quite a critic of John Paul, but I give him credit because he said over and over again that he was opposed to the death penalty. And I believe St. Louis he made a very strong
It was a long and winding road to that place because the death penalty, he did support the death for a long time. He supported the death penalty under certain heinous circumstances. Only recently did he say take away those certain heinous restrictions and say it's wrong in all cases. But it's been a long and winding road for him to get to a complete absolute no to the death penalty.
Well, you know, it's the death penalty, and there are other things. The church speaks against governments who mistreat poor people. I mean, you could go on and on. You could withhold communion for any number
of
things.
Absolutely.
As far as what the church does and doesn't believe in, but it seems that the major sins now are all involve sex
and women.
Yes, sex and women.
And women.
And, you know, the Catholic Church in, I believe it was a year or two ago, actually, there was a Vatican official who made a statement that said condoms cause AIDS.
Well, that's
not just because condoms don't work very well, but they actually cause AIDS.
Well, that's consistent again with this administration, with the Senate Majority Leader, Dr. Frist, saying that you can get AIDS from tears. So that kind of makes sense. I mean, it's consistent.
He said you could get AIDS from tears?
Yes, he did.
I wasn't aware of that.
Yes, he did. And, in fact, it was George Stephanopoulos asked him. He said, now, it's been said that you've said that you can get AIDS from tears. Did you say that? And Dr. Frist said, he said the studies have not been conclusive. And George Stephanopoulos said, what? The studies have been conclusive. Are you saying that? He said, yeah. Yes, you can get AIDS.
Well, this is the same physician who looked at video of Terri Schiavo without examining her, mind you, and outside of his area of expertise in medicine, looked at a video and said, well, Terry Schiavo's not in a vegetative state.
That is correct. We have to take a break, folks. I'm talking to Margaret Kimberly, freedom writer for theblackcommentator.com, joining us from New York City. This is Liz Brown, looking black. We have so much more to talk about. Stay with us.
You're listening to the best of the wake-up call. Stick around for more following the traffic and your weather and these local commercials. Good morning, St. Louis. 31 minutes after the hour of 7 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton. Let's take a look at this hour's traffic and weather. Eastbound 40 between 70 East and Callahan, which is out in Lakes past Wentzville. Look for the highway to be closed due to an accident, an overturned dump truck at Callahan Road. Traffic's being diverted onto Callahan Road, then back on the East Service Road to back to Highway 61, then back to Prospect, then to Highway 40. So look for the detours and expect delays if you're heading westbound or eastbound on Highway 40 out around Wentzville area. Northbound 170 between Ladue and Del Mar, look for a disabled vehicle on the ramp to Del Mar. Westbound 44 between Bowles and 141, there's an accident that's on the ramp to northbound 141. Westbound 270 from 367 into West Florissant, look for slow traffic. Northbound 270 from Tesson Ferry through Doherty Ferry, look for delays. Westbound 5570 from 64 into the Poplar Street Bridge, look for some slowdowns there. Eastbound 5570 from 64 into 203. They've got paving operations going on, as well as eastbound 5570 from the Poplar Street Bridge to the 64 merge. Look for some slowdowns as one to two lanes may be closed during off-peak hours. Eastbound 44 from Soccer Park to 270. Look for slow traffic. Northbound 270 at Highway 70. Look for delays, especially in the right lanes as you approach the 70 exits. Westbound Kingbridge traffic is moving slowly across into the landing. That is a look at your traffic this hour. Now let's take a look at your forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Thursday. For today, look forward to partly sunny skies this morning. Becoming mostly cloudy throughout the day, 50% chance of showers, high around 90. For this evening, showers and thunderstorms likely, lows in the upper 60s. Wednesday, partly cloudy with a high in the lower 80s. And Thursday, partly cloudy with a high in the lower 80s as well. That is a look at your traffic and your weather. Currently, we have 71 degrees, cloudy skies. Stick around for more of the best of the wake-up call. Liz Brown is out ill today. She will be back tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. Till then, we're going to bring you more selections from the best of the wake-up call. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU, your station for the issues that matter most to you.
People, have you heard about Golden Grocer Natural Market? It's locally owned and operated for over 30 years and serving and meeting your health needs by ensuring the best quality and selection in vitamin supplements and organic groceries. Golden Grocer Natural Market has the largest loose herb selection around. You can also get your grains and natural beauty items as well. Their staff is friendly, knowledgeable, and committed to helping you on your journey to improved and enhanced health. Golden Grocer believes that the healthiest goal is achieving balance in every area of your life. So, live your life like it's golden, and let Golden Grocer help you along the way. Golden Grocer, Natural Market, 335 North Euclid, right there in the Central West End. Open 10 a.m. to 7 p.m., Monday through Saturday, and Sunday 12 to 5. Golden Grocer, 367-0405. That's 367-0405.
Want to help local charities and not-for-profit groups? Want to have a great time doing it? Then head down to Patty Long's 9th Street Abbey in Soulard this Friday from 5 to 9 p.m. for a party on the patio. Every week, a different organization receives a portion of the proceeds and all the tips that their volunteer service can bring in. There's a featured drink each week, free hors d'oeuvres, and live music. Summer fun and helping others has never been so easy. Party on the patio with Patty Long's 9th Street Abbey all summer long. This week's party benefits the Soulard Beautification Committee.
Connect Care, still connected to the community. Sometimes it seems like things are changing so fast that it's hard to keep up and hard to keep track. At Connect Care, we want you to know that, yes, there have been some changes, and yes, we are still connected to the community. At Connect Care, we still have a retail pharmacy open 8 to 5 Monday through Friday. At Connect Care, we still provide transportation to patients that qualify. At Connect Care, we still provide access to in-house laboratory services. At Connect Care, we still provide some of the region's best board-certified doctors. At Connect Care, we still provide urgent care. And at Connect Care, we still see patients on a sliding fee scale. Yes, changes have been made at Connect Care, but we're still connected to you. Connect Care, still connected to the community.
Hey, St. Louis, this is Chris Monroe. What are you doing this Tuesday night? Hopefully, you're tuned in right here on WGNU 920 because the Chris Monroe Show is on your radio. It starts at 9 p.m., and we'll be talking about all types of topics, such as the war in Iraq, who will be the next president, and a whole lot more. Want to know more about the Chris Monroe Show? Double-click it at chrismonroeshow.com. That's the Chris Monroe Show each and every Tuesday night at 9 o'clock right here on WGNU.
The struggle for fairness on the award-winning wake-up call with Liz Brown.
Now we take you back to the best of the wake-up call right here on AM 920 WGNU.
Looking Black, the week in review, the week ahead, in differing perspectives with Liz Brown.
Welcome back to Looking Black. I'm talking to this morning Margaret Kimberly, freedom writer for the blackcommentator.com, joining us from New York City. Margaret, welcome back.
Thank you.
So what else has caught your eye out there?
Oh, let's see. We have our Secretary of State, Condi Rice, seems to show her incompetence every time she opens her mouth. I'm quite tired of being asked, aren't you proud that the Secretary of State is a black woman? And I always respond, well, if she were competent, yes, I would be. But she just went to Russia and said in Moscow that Putin had too much power.
Huh?
Now, can you imagine a visiting diplomat, a foreign secretary from another nation coming to Washington and saying, you know, that George Bush, he's just got too much power.
Well, that sounds very John Bolton-ish.
Does it not? Yes. Well, that's, you know, the way. Yes, the man who said there was no United Nations and it wouldn't matter if it blew up, but then wanted to work there. It's like, well, why do you want to work there then? But
Margaret. Condoleezza Rice,
yes,
went to Russia and said to the face of the president of Russia.
Well, she didn't say it to him. She said it to the press. But
okay,
you know, it doesn't matter.
To their New York Times, she said, oh, yeah, your president has way too much power. And wait a minute. Not only the gall of her going there and saying that, but, baby, who do you work for?
Bush had a public argument. Essentially, they had this joint press conference with Putin, which is the strangest thing I've ever seen, where they basically had an argument. And, you know, Bush tried to say, we want democracy in Russia. And Putin said, well, you know, you got that electoral college thing over there, so I don't know what you're talking to me about. And So it wasn't surprising, but that's what she does.
How did the Russian papers respond to this extraordinary? Because I didn't see that.
It was a pretty muted. I mean, I guess when you're Secretary of State, you sort of get away with it. It just means that our relations with the rest of the world are an absolute disaster. And you know, Colin Powell, I don't think he's a better person, but he was slicker and smoother. He would not have said something so stupid. But she is stupid, and She's a true believer in the right-wing cause, I just call it Bushism, which is actually a different kind of animal, but she's a true believer. She thinks that those people are wonderful. She thinks that everything they do is good and righteous, so she will say something stupid like that.
And what was she connecting that to? What was the example that she articulated as evidence of Putin having too much power in his own country after working for a man who's only the president because of the right-wing justices in the Supreme Court?
Then he stole an election. How about that?
Yeah, that was a lot easier to say.
Yes, he said, you know, it was they were concerned about elections in Russia and the power that Russia had over Ukraine and some of the other former Soviet republics. But it was just bizarre. It was just absolutely bizarre. But she goes, the thing she says and does is it's just.
But she's woefully. She's woefully short of all of the experience and requirements for the position that she holds.
Well, yeah, I mean, you'd think that she, you know, having been, you know, National Security Advisor, although if you were in charge of national security on 9/11, you should have resigned or been fired the next day.
Or at least don't put it on your resume.
Yeah.
You know.
But it just goes on and on, and it just...
But wait, one more thing. It's just popping into my mind, Margaret. What is Condoleezza Rice's area of expertise?
Allegedly Russia.
Dang.
She speaks Russian. I mean, she speaks, you know, all these languages and plays the piano and plus this and plus that. That's all very lovely. Doesn't seem to help her much in her job.
So she said in Russian, your president has too much power.
Yeah, by the way, yeah, the guy running this country that I'm standing in now, he's just got too much power.
Wow.
It's just, it astounds me. But it just shows you that the gloves are off. The effort to nominate Bolton... getting rid of Colin Powell, you know, Colin Powell just
but I'm proud of
good cop.
I am proud of him in this last week effort that he's engaging. You know, now that he no longer has the gig, he did not sign off on with the other former secretaries of state endorsing John Bolton. He
yes.
said, "No, baby, you ain't put my name up on that."
No, I guess he figured now that I'm out.
Yeah,
I'll just
on this one. No,
I'll say what I want to say now.
Yeah,
but but the gloves are off. There's not even any pretense of a good cop anymore. It's like we're all bad cops. Get over it, you know.
So what else caught your eye?
Oh, let's see. We have I don't know. I wish there was some good news to report, but Iraq, there continues to be. Nothing but bad news for the regarding the occupation of this country. It's becoming, it has been obvious for a long time, but it's finally starting to get into the papers that the billions of tax dollars, every time they come back and say, well, we need another $80 billion, we need another $80 billion, well, we need another $90 billion. And I don't know if you remember, before the occupation, we were told that they just pump oil and pay for the reconstruction
that
of Iraq, Iraqi
mm-hmm.
oil.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so much for that idea. They keep coming back to, by the way, that's our money, yours and mine and your listeners, to allegedly reconstruct Iraq. Now, the money is going to Halliburton, Dick Cheney's folks, Bechtel, Rumsfeld's folks, and they have not reconstructed a single thing in Iraq.
Mm. And we have to take a break, folks. I'm talking to Margaret Kimberly, freedom writer for blackcommentator.com, joining us from New York City. We're looking black. This is Liz Brown. Don't forget, we are broadcasting live on the World Wide Web from Xenia to Zimbabwe at WGNU.net. Email me at Liz Brown, LizzBrown, at SBCGlobal.net. Stay with us, folks. We have so much more to talk about when we look black.
You're listening to the best of the wake-up call. Stick around for more following these commercials.
If you don't get your family reunion t-shirts done on time, here's a tip. Call Robert Guy and Associates, 421-3200. They specialize in family reunion t-shirts and softball team t-shirts. In fact, Robert Guy and Associates will put together fabulous t-shirts for all occasions. Here's the address, 2006 Salisbury. The number is 421-3200. Robert Guy and Associates, your t-shirt specialist. And check this out. If you mention you heard this on the Liz Brown Show, you'll get 10% off. It doesn't get any better. 421-3200, Robert Guy and Associates.
This is Phil Person of Person Roofing. I'd like to introduce to you one of my customers, Joe Scoggins. Mr. Scoggins, how long ago did we work on your property?
It was approximately 8 to 9 years ago, Mr. Persons.
Okay, have you had any problems with your roof since that time?
Well, actually, about 3 weeks ago, I called you, and there was some water damage that was caused as a result of the storm last fall.
Okay.
And you were out the following day to do the repair work. And it was done in such a professional way that I would recommend you to any and everyone.
So how much did we charge you?
It was free, and it was done within a matter of 3 hours.
All right.
So I called you one day, and you were out the very next day, you and your son and his assistant, and you went up on the roof, and you accomplished the task within a matter of 3 hours.
This is Phil Person of Person Roofing. Our service starts when we complete your roof. Our number is 361-7127. You can call us day or night. 361-7127.
Previously on the Chris Monroe Show.
That is just one of the dumbest things I've ever heard. Barack Obama does not have enough experience to be president. Look at George W. Bush. He had all the experience in the world. He was the governor of Texas for many years. And look what he turned out to be, a total flop. That's why I don't believe that talking point. That's why I believe Barack Obama will be the next president of the United States.
The Chris Monroe Show, Tuesday nights at 9, right here on AM 920 WGNU.
Are you an inventor, or do you know an inventor who would like to attempt to have an invention or idea patented and submitted to industry? Well, for free information on how to proceed, call this toll-free number.
Call 800-346-9966.
InventHelp, one of America's largest invention companies, has inventor information you can have for free. Record your invention's date of origination, plus get an information brochure and other materials of interest to new inventors. Learn how to get this free information just by calling this toll-free number.
Call 800-346-9966. That's 1-800-346-9966.
Even if you have an idea for improving an existing product and don't know where to go with it, you'll want this free inventor's information. It shows how InventHelp may assist you in trying to patent your invention and submit it to industry. So call InventHelp right now, toll free.
Call 800-346-9966. That's 1-800-346-9966.
Single, female, in search of companionship, male or female, must be willing to give and receive unconditional love, must be affectionate, playful, cuddly, willing to be by my side through good times and bad, not run away when they see what I look like in the morning, must be willing to cheer me up after a rough day, likes to go for long walks or runs, want to sit by my side while I watch a movie that makes me cry, a companion that will be there when I get home and be excited to see me when I walk in the door. A companion that won't judge me or take me for granted. I know you're out there. I just wish dogs could read.
To find the companion of your dreams, go to www.strayrescue.org to find out about weekly adoption events, volunteer opportunities like foster parenting, dog walking, fundraising, and more. Stray Rescue of St. Louis is a non-for-profit organization operating 2 no-kill shelters in the St. Louis area. For more information, call 314-771-6121 or go to www.strayrescue.org.
Hello, I'm Doug Scott, director of the Illinois EPA, with a special message for Illinois farmers. You've probably already heard a lot about global warming and that it could be devastating to Illinois, including our crop production. To help combat the problem, Governor Blagojevich has created the Illinois Conservation and Climate Initiative that helps farmers earn money for trapping carbon dioxide in the soil. For additional information on how you can be a part of the solution to climate change and make a little extra money, go to IllinoisClimate.org website.
Anywhere in the world at WGNU.net. The award-winning wake-up call with Liz Brown.
You've been listening to the best of the wake-up call. Stick around for more. That's up next. We'll have the ABC News, your local news, traffic, and weather coming up following this segment.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Who knows?
Looking Black, The Week in Review, The Week Ahead, and Differing Perspectives with Liz Brown.
Welcome back to Looking Black. Our guest this morning, Margaret Kimberly, freedom writer for theblackcommentator.com, joining us from New York City. Margaret, what else you got for us?
Yeah, the as I was saying, the occupation of Iraq is making that country a cash cow for large corporations at the expense of the Iraqi people, despite all the billions of dollars in our tax money that has gone to allegedly reconstruct Iraq. It's sitting in a vault at Halliburton or Bechtel somewhere because there's less electricity in Iraq now than there was before the occupation. There's less sewage treatment now. 100,000 Iraqis have died as a result of the occupation, either from direct military action, being shot or blown up, or starved. Iraqi children are twice as malnourished now than as they were under Saddam Hussein. Saddam Hussein had healthier Iraqi kids than in Iraq occupied by the United States.
We're kind of getting close to how we're treating our children here.
Oh, absolutely. It's, you know, but that's privatization. You know, when people talk about privatizing Social Security, I'm like, well, that's privatization for you. So before you even think about that, just look at a privatized Iraq that tells you what's going to happen here.
Well, one of the things, I don't know if you had a chance to hear during the break, we're going to have start having a monthly feature with the Congressional Black Caucus. And we're going to start to talk about some of the issues that they are concerned with. Margaret, what's been your assessment? You've written a lot out there, and you've observed a lot, and you've studied a lot of this. How are we doing in terms of our elected officials with regard to the community of African descent?
Well, we had a great article in blackcommentator.com. We publish every Thursday. The Black Caucus is Losing Cohesion is the name of the article, and it's about members of the Black Caucus who are starting to vote. 10 voted in favor of the disastrous bankruptcy bill.
Ain't that a blip?
That we just discussed.
And also, Harold Ford is being touted as the up-and-coming face of black politicians, and he was one of the people that voted for that disastrous bill.
Oh, he is. And, well, you know, the thing that's interesting is it's not surprising that Harold Ford would do that, but there were some who you would not expect. 8 voted to repeal the estate tax. And this is a great piece, if I can tap my own shop and our co-publishers, Glenn Ford and Peter Gamble, wrote a great piece.
It really is a very provocative piece, and it's one of those things that kind of like, I think sometimes that the community of African descent is kind of like, you know, you see a brother walking down the street and he has locks. You think that he's really down. I mean, you automatically, he gets black cred. He gets African cred, okay, as opposed to someone who has processed hair, okay? And I think that when far too many of us out here, when we think about the Black Caucus, we give them automatic black cred.
Mm-hmm.
But there, we are at a point in our history where we have to be seriously attentive to what the people that are members of these organizations that are, and we do that to our churches as well. Because given what's happening with these black churches hooking up with this or chasing the faith-based money, we're giving black cred to these organizations and institutions, and we're not challenging them or even looking closely at them.
You're absolutely right. There's the subtitle of the article is Time to Draw Some Bright Lines, and I think that the constituents, all of these, one of the problems with the Black Caucus is all the members have safe seats.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, if they're breathing and if they want to run again, they're back in office.
Mm-hmm.
And that worked fine. Well, there were always problems with that, but now that you have this concerted effort to buy off members of Congress, that's a huge problem, and I think we have to make it clear that you can't be my congressperson and vote for a bankruptcy bill. You cannot be my congressperson and vote to destroy Social Security, and that is the brightest line of all, this effort to do away with Social Security. They don't call it that, of course. First they said private accounts, and then they go to a focus group and say, well, that doesn't work. We're going to call them personal accounts. They can call it what they want to call it. But they want to do away with the most successful, the most solvent government program of all time.
The one that
has helped millions of people, 90%, I believe, of blacks receiving Social Security, I know it's a very high number, depend solely on Social Security for income. Mm-hmm. And anything, any attempt to change that system is going to be disastrous for us. Black minor children depend on Social Security survivor benefits to a larger degree. This is just an attempt to give our money, to give, and it's part of a larger trend, to give the taxpayers money to corporate America. This will make Wall Street trillions of dollars.
And, Margaret, we have about 3 minutes here. Are there any stories coming out of New York that we need to have our eye on?
Yeah, a mayoral race. Our current mayor, Mike Bloomberg, who never held office before. He's a very wealthy man, a billionaire, in fact.
And Republican.
And a Republican. He was a Democrat for many years. Mm-hmm. When he decided to run for mayor, he realized he couldn't win a Democrat primary and became a Republican.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he acts like one. But at any rate, he's running for re-election.
But he may get a challenger.
Well, there's a Republican who may challenge him.
Uh-huh.
I don't think he's in any danger there. Democratic field was looking strong. The front runner, Fernando Ferrer, nearly became the Democratic nominee last time around. Mm-hmm. Was pandering to an audience of police officers, and I'm assuming you've heard of the Amadou Diallo case,
where
a young man from Guinea was received 19 shots, 80 shots, 50 shots fired, I'm sorry, 19 of which struck him. He was doing absolutely nothing wrong, no criminal record. They thought they saw a gun, and it was a case that galvanized the community. And Fernando Ferrer, the officers were indicted, but they were acquitted. They moved the trial upstate, of course, and they were acquitted. And Ferrer, speaking to a police organization, said it was an over-indictment.
Mm.
And
so that weakens him.
Oh, it certainly does.
It made
him look less strong. Congressman Rangel endorsed Virginia Fields, a black woman who's the Manhattan Borough President. She was not taken seriously before. But black elected officials and community leaders are furious with Ferrer. There was a decision it was Fred's turn. Strong black candidate Bill Thompson, the city controller, stepped aside because it was Fred's turn. And then Fred goes and messes up. And Bloomberg is in a weakened position, and I think he could lose, but now I'm not so sure.
I also heard rumblings the former senator from Nebraska.
Bob Kerry. Yes,
Bob Kerry.
Was thinking about jumping
in.
Yeah, he's now the president of the New School, a university here in New York City. And for a few days he was mumbling and, you know, making rumblings about running for mayor. But he, you know, has said that he was thinking about it, but he's not thinking about it anymore, and thank goodness. I see no reason why we need former senators from Nebraska to be our mayor.
There you go.
So that's an interesting story. So we'll see what happens in November.
All right. And where can people find some of your writings, Kimberly? Margaret.
BlackCommentator.com. I have a weekly column. And I also have my own weblog, freedomwriter.blogspot.com.
Wonderful.
And it's been a pleasure. And
Margaret, it has been wonderful. Thank you so much.
You've been listening to the best of the Wake Up Call. Stick around. Following ABC News and your local news is up next. This is AM 920 WGNU.
Tonight, I will never say that progress is being made. If you stick a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. You pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that's below that the below me.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air, tell me, brother.
But the hard truth is that not everyone is sharing in this city's splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever, more families in trouble, more and more people who need help but can't find it.
H-12.
struggle against the common enemies of man, tyranny, poverty, disease, and war itself.
We believe that all men are created equal, yet many are denied equal treatment.
And so we say to all in this nation who dare listen to us, black, white,
for the issues that matter most. It's AM 920 WGNU.
Here's the latest from ABC News. I'm Karen Chase. Has the waning support for the president's strategy in Iraq reached a pivot point? One official is making that claim as more Republicans add their voices to the chorus of congressional calls for a pullout. White House spokesman Tony Snow says the president has no immediate plans to change course in Iraq because it's still too soon to tell if the surge has worked.
For those who say we want a new strategy, we say, yeah, absolutely. And by the way, the forces for implementing that new strategy became fully operational 2 weeks ago.
A progress report due out later this week is expected to conclude little has been made, but Snow says it's too soon to draw that conclusion.
There are going to be some benchmarks that we've met. There are going to be some benchmarks that haven't been met, some that we can't quite judge at this juncture.
However, ABC's Vic Ratner tells us Democrats are not willing to wait.
Democrats hope to force votes on starting troop withdrawals this year and on changing the mission and rescinding the authorization that Congress gave the president 5 years ago to go to war in Iraq.
Heat and humidity are making tempers short across the East Coast. ABC's Carolina Tarazona tells us New York City has become the baked apple. As the tri-state area braces for another round of this summer sizzler, public pools are staying open later around the area. New York City has opened its network of nearly 300 air-conditioned cooling centers. Mayor Bloomberg is urging residents to conserve power to help prevent blackouts. Cities across the East Coast have opened cooling centers as well. A startling reaction to the recent rash of tainted products imported from China. The head of China's Food and Drug Administration has been executed after being convicted of taking bribes to approve unsafe drugs, including an antibiotic that killed 10 people. A healthy diet after menopause may help ward off breast cancer. A study of 3,000 Chinese women found those who ate a Western-style diet high in meats and sweets had a 60% higher risk of breast cancer than those who ate a typical Chinese diet, heavy in vegetables and soy. This is ABC News.
Mom and Dad always told us, make sure you put 20% down on your home. But maybe you're like a lot of other people. You don't have it. Can you still buy? Yes. But should you? I'll be back in a moment with advice from my book, The Millionaire Zone.
Today's advice from Jennifer Openshaw is sponsored by LendingTree. Whether you're looking to refinance your mortgage or want a home equity loan, visit LendingTree.com today and get up to 4 real offers in minutes. Our loan specialists are there 24/7 to help you choose the right loan. When banks compete, you win. See website or call for sponsorship details and licensing.
If you've got the cash to put 20% down on the home, do it. On a $300,000 house, that's $60,000 up front. Yes, there are ways to get around this down payment, like with zero or little money down, but you'll have to pay for it. You'll have the cost of private mortgage insurance, or you'll have to take out a second loan with a higher interest rate. Still, put down whatever you can. Even if you have to pay mortgage insurance, at least it's now tax deductible. Plus, you'll be building up equity.
He didn't die at his Paris apartment. That's the claim from a member of Jim Morrison's inner circle.
Far from dying of natural causes, a massive heroin overdose claimed the life of the Doors singer in the toilet of a Paris nightclub. That's the word from the then manager of that club, the Rock and Roll Circus. Sam Burnett, who later went on to become a journalist, says the two dealers that sold Morrison the dope moved his body to his nearby apartment. Burnett says others in the club that night, like singer Marianne Faithfull, have known the truth for years but have remained silent. Tom Rivers, ABC News, London.
Is there a connection between a nutrient found in fruits and fish and lung health? Harvard researchers think they've found one. They found that teens who don't get enough vitamin E, found in vegetable oil and nuts, are more likely to have asthma, and teens with the lowest intake of fruit and especially vitamin C had weaker lungs. They say the recommended dosage of 85 milligrams of vitamin C per day may not be enough for teens to have healthy lungs. I'm Karen Chase, ABC News.
WGNU Newsroom.
Good morning, St. Louis. This is Patrick Brandmeier with your WGNU News Update for the 8 o'clock hour. In the news this Tuesday, Midwest drivers are dealing with traffic headaches. The Illinois Department of Transportation is resurfacing a four-mile stretch where Interstates 55, 70, and 64 merge. IDOT warns motorists that the repaving project could cause delays of 15 to 20 minutes. The entire highway from the Poplar Street Bridge to Gateway International Raceway will be undergoing the work for the next 2 to 3 weeks. IDOT officials say lane closures will not take place during peak travel hours. A former local teacher is going on trial. Kathy Hemminghouse is accused of having sex with students at Ferguson Middle School. She was an employee of the special school district and taught at the middle school for 3.5 years. She is charged with sexually abusing 3 students during her time as a teacher. Prosecutors have charged her with at least 19 felony counts. Finally this hour, St. Louis is one of the top volunteering cities in the U.S. That's according to a national government study. The Gateway City was ranked 18th among big metropolitan areas, with just under 31% of adults volunteering. The state of Missouri's volunteering rate was around 32%. The study found that Midwesterners are more inclined to volunteer than people on the coasts. Minneapolis-St. Paul topped the list with more than 40%, while Las Vegas was at the bottom with 14.4%. That's your look at local news for the 8 o'clock hour. I'm Patrick Brandmeier, bringing you the news that matters most to you.
Good morning, St. Louis. 6 minutes after the hour of 8 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton. Let's take a quick look at this hour's traffic and your weather. Eastbound 40 out past 70 East and Callahan, look for an overturned vehicle, and that's caused the closure of the road due to the accident. Expect stop traffic that's out around Wentzville. There are detours posted. Just expect long delays. Northbound 170 between Ladue and Del Mar, the disabled vehicle that's on the ramp to Del Mar. Expect stop and go traffic. Westbound 44 from Bowles through 141, there's an accident on the ramp to northbound 141. Northbound 270 from 255 in the Doherty Ferry, look for stop-and-go traffic. Westbound 5570 from 64 into the Poplar Street Bridge, you've got delays. Eastbound 70 from K through 79, look for slow traffic. Eastbound 5570 from Poplar Street Bridge all the way into 203, you can expect lane closures throughout the day, with 1 or 2 lanes may be closed during off-peak hours at times, so look for some slowdowns there. Just watch the detours and take your time. Eastbound 44 from Soccer Park through 270, look for slow traffic. Southbound 270 at 70 in Dorset, look for heavy volume going on there. Northbound 170 at Ladue and Del Mar, that incident's been cleared at the ramp to Del Mar now. And northbound 270, as you approach Highway 70, look for delays in the 70 exit lanes. That is a look at your traffic. Now let's take a look at your forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Thursday. For today, look forward to partly sunny skies this morning, mostly cloudy throughout the day, 50% chance of showers, high around 90. For this evening, showers and thunderstorms likely, lows in the upper 60s. Wednesday and Thursday, pretty much the same, partly cloudy both days, highs in the low to mid 80s on both days. Currently, at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have 73 degrees and cloudy skies. Lambert Fields reporting 77. Stay tuned for more of the best of the wake-up call. Liz Brown is out today. She will be back first thing in the morning at 6 a.m. tomorrow morning. Until then, we're going to bring you more selections from the best of the wake-up call. We'll take another look at your traffic and weather in the bottom of the 8 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU, your station for the issues that matter most to you.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air.
Going to give it to you. You were born with power. have peace all over the world. Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis. I will never say that progress is being made.
Please do not beg for power. Nobody is going to give it to you. You were born with power.
Very sad news for all of you. The people who love peace all over the world. Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis. I will never say that progress is being made. If you took a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. You pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that blows up the low knee.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Feel the progress.
But the hard truth is that not everyone is sharing in this city's splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever. More families in trouble. More and more people who need help but can't find it.
Struggle against the common enemies of man, tyranny, poverty.
So welcome back to the Wake Up Call. This is Liz Brown, living my life as an African and loving it. 4540400 is my phone number. 4546609 is my fax. And don't forget, we are broadcasting live on the World Wide Web at www.wgnu.net. And you can email me at lizbrown, LIZZBROWN, at sbcglobal.net. They're my digits. You need to get to me. We have much, much, much business to tend to. This morning, in this 7 o'clock hour, we're going to start something that will be a monthly feature of the Wake Up Call, talking to members of the Congressional Black Caucus. This morning, joining us from Charlotte, North Carolina, we have the chairman of the Congressional Black Caucus, Congressman Mel Watt. Congressman, good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
Fine.
Very good. Congressman, I'm looking at the papers from all over the country this morning, reading the stories about Senator Frist going to the meet with organized Christian conservative groups to denounce Democrats as being against people of faith. You read about the bankruptcy bill that was passed that's going to harm Black folks and women and divorced people. And we look at all of these relentless challenges that that the citizens of the United States are being constantly confronted with. Tell me what the role of the CBC is in a climate like this.
Well, we want to make sure, first of all, that we don't lose any of the ground that we've already gained over the years, and to the extent that we can create an atmosphere, agitate, argue, present our case, try to make the case that there's still work to be done and that we need to be mobilizing to do it. And that's the same historic mission that the Congressional Black Caucus has had throughout its existence.
What are the issues that connect you as an entity? Because I have seen, I have looked at some of the voting of some of the Congressional Black Caucus members, and to be honest with you, Congressman, I'm a little concerned that the issues that broaden and causes the Congressional Black Caucus to stay together are in jeopardy with some of the votes of some of the Congressional Black Caucus members, particularly on the bankruptcy bill.
Well, I think there's an expectation that members of the Congressional Black Caucus will be together on every single issue, and that's certainly not the case because we represent different districts. But as long as we stay within the core mission of the Congressional Black Caucus to continue to fight to close disparities that exist between African Americans and other Americans in every aspect of our lives, there's a tremendous amount of unity around the agenda of the Congressional Black Caucus that we put together.
I've noticed that in your literature that you put out, that you use the phrase that was I assume was coined by Congressman Bill Clay, that the CBC has no permanent friends and no permanent enemies, just permanent interest. And I look at that permanent interest part, and I wonder if the permanent interest part of it, again, going back to the bankruptcy bill, aren't those economic issues part of our permanent interest?
Well, I think some members of the Congressional Black Caucus believe that the bankruptcy bill itself is not necessarily at the core of the mission of the Congressional Black Caucus. Reasonable minds can differ about what's in the interest of some blacks as opposed to other blacks, depending on what their economic status is. But I don't think there's any difference of opinion that by whatever means we need to continue to work to close the disparities that continue to exist. Now, there may be reasonable differences about how you accomplish that and close those disparities, but around the core agenda, I don't think there's any difference of opinion at all.
And what is the core agenda limited to?
It's about all of the things in which there are disparities, and one of those is economics. And I'm not saying that there are a number of people in the Congressional Black Caucus who voted against the bankruptcy bill.
There are. You were one of them.
I was one of them.
Yes,
but on some issues, there is not unanimity. But that doesn't mean that there is not a unanimity of interest in about closing the gaps. And those gaps exist in education, they exist in health care, they exist in justice, in retirement security, in economic security, which you mentioned, and they exist in foreign policy. All of those are dealt with in the CBC's agenda.
Are you a little concerned with what there seems to be an effort afoot? I see it in the Democratic Party. I see it in the Republican Party, particularly in the Republican Party, where corporate America has clearly gotten a toehold, if not a death hold, on some of the Republicans, and that the corporate America seems to be determining the agenda of the issues that are pursued or defended by the Republican Party. Should we, as people of African descent, be concerned about the same corporate interests taking a hold of parts of the black Congressional Black Caucus? Or is the Black Caucus, are you seeing any evidence that the Black Caucus is immune from those corporate interests?
Well, I think throughout history, money has played an important influence in politics. There's no question about that. They have played an important influence on Democrats and Republicans. And for us to think that people who have lobbyists full-time in the Congress outside our doors are not going to have some influence on all members of Congress, I think is probably naive. But I think when it comes to fighting the interest of the African American community, nobody would put the interest of money above our own interest, and that's what the Congressional Black Caucus has always done and continues to do. And I think that's what Bill Clay meant when he said we don't have permanent friends or permanent enemies. We just have permanent interest. We're continuing to try to fight the battles every day that in the legislative and appropriations process are in the interests of African American people.
How does a person standing on the outside, looking in at the Congressional Black Caucus, determine what issues that the Black Caucus is going to embrace as an entity? Because, like I said, that there were about, I think that there were 10 Black CBC members that did not vote or voted against the, or voted for the bankruptcy bill, 8 on the estate bill. And I appreciate what you say about that there are issues that we can reasonably differ on, but how does the average person, when looking at how the bankruptcy bill impacts on people of African descent so disparately, that, I mean, we are hit hard with this bankruptcy bill and will be continued to suffer as a result of this legislation, how do we, in our minds, distinguish that this was not a core issue of the Congressional Black Caucus?
Well, Congressional Black Caucus has never taken a position on the bankruptcy bill because we've never considered the bankruptcy bill to be part of the core agenda of the Congressional Black Caucus. Look at the Congressional Black Caucus's agenda, and I'm sure you have reviewed it.
Mm-hmm.
There are 6 items that are in that core agenda. But the focus of the agenda is on closing and eliminating disparities, and there are reasonable people who can differ about how you close those disparities and what items are on the agenda. But I don't think there's any question about where the Congressional Black Caucus stands, and for you to say that 10 members of the Congressional Black Caucus out of 43 or 8 members of the Congressional Black Caucus out of the 43 somehow define what the agenda of the Congressional Black Caucus is, I think is just unfair.
I'm not saying that it defines the agenda. I guess I'm raising the question of how...
But you want me to spend all of my time this morning talking about how not to do something, we spend all of our time in our community, or so much time in our community, worrying about what other people are doing, rather than trying to focus on the agenda that's important. The Congressional Black Caucus was the only caucus that put forward a budget that would fully fund No Child Left Behind, for example, that would provide for more aggressive health care for African Americans. That would support our historically black colleges and universities in a way that none of the other budgets did. So I can't spend all my time worrying about why somebody voted against something. You have to look at the votes that were cast in favor of something to determine what the Congressional Black Caucus's agenda is. You don't look at the 3 or 4 or 10 people who might have voted against something that you may have favored, because if we did that, we'd spend all of our time bickering with each other about how we were divided rather than how we were united.
And I guess there's a lack of clarity then in the minds of many people that call the show and many people that talk about the things that are being done in Congress, as that Congress is being completely under assault on many different issues.
Well, it is under assault, and money is playing an influence.
Absolutely. And then the fact that a body that consists of 41 people that are assigned to the permanent interest of the people of the community of African descent, that body, it seems, should not cannot afford to lose any members.
Lose any members, but at the same time, that's a really kind of a narrow view of African Americans and their interests, because it assumes that every single African American, regardless of who they represent, where they're from, what their constituents are, have the same views on every issue, and that's never going to be the case. It never has in the past. It never will in the future. So we don't dwell on our differences. We try to identify the things we're united behind, and and work on those items and keep going. And that
there becomes the question, what are the permanent interests of people of African descent?
But have you gone through the agenda?
I have the agenda in front of me, the closing the achievement and opportunity gaps in education and emphasizing universal access and affordability for health care. Yes, those are the...
And there's not a single member of the Congressional Black Caucus who doesn't support that agenda.
Mm-hmm.
I assure you.
But again, if we're going to talk about the economic equality or the economic access, we looking at some of these moneyed issues go along with the
They do. I wouldn't argue with that at all. But also, fighting for school lunch programs and to feed hungry people and to house people, all of that goes along with it too. And just because, you could pick out one issue in every one of those areas that there may be differences of opinion about how to accomplish something.
But
that doesn't mean that the Congressional Black Caucus is not a unified entity behind a common agenda that we all support.
And we're not talking so much, Congressman, about differences of opinion on different issues. We're talking about...
Well, that's exactly what you're talking about, because some people voted against the bankruptcy bill.
And the point that I would like to make with that...
33 members of the Congressional Black Caucus voted for the bankruptcy bill. And you say nine or ten voted against it, and you're dwelling on the 9 or 10 who voted against it. What about the 33 who voted for it?
And the reason why I'm dwelling on that, Congressman, is because of the enormity of the bankruptcy bill and the enormity of the of people who will be impacted by it, and also by the enormity of the giveaway to the interests that have no people of African descent on their agenda, the enormity of the money that these groups, that the credit card companies that have funded this bill, the giveaway that they have gotten, and then that's one of the reasons why we're not going to have the money to fund Head Start the way that it should be funded. That's another reason why we don't have the money to fund Medicaid the way that we need to fund it, because of the actions of allowing companies like that to get more and more money, and people that need the money so that they can afford to fight some of these issues and join with the Congressional Black Caucus on some of these educational issues, they're not going to have the money because of things like the bankruptcy bill.
Liz, I happen to agree with you. I voted against the bankruptcy bill, but for me to spend all of my time, all of the time on this show this morning that I've spent arguing about what 9 or 10 members who didn't necessarily, on balance, look at that bill and agree with you on, I think is counterproductive. I happen to agree with everything you said, but reasonable minds can differ about how you get that, about how a single bill impacts our community. And for you to imply that somehow that suggests that the Congressional Black Caucus as an entity doesn't have an agenda and is not supported and is not unified behind that agenda, I think is unfair. If we all had voted for the bankruptcy bill, I don't think that there's always going to be an issue that you could point out where we would be, there would be some people voting in the opposite direction. But that doesn't mean that we don't have an agenda that we are unified behind. And that's the only point I'm making. I'm not differing with anything you say as a personal proposition, but when you indict the whole Congressional Black Caucus, the great majority of whom voted against this bill, and say that somehow the Congressional Black Caucus doesn't have an agenda because 9 people or 10 people voted against a bill, I just think it's not fair what you're saying.
Well, I think to interpret my concern about the breakaway of 10 people on the Black Caucus on a bill like the bankruptcy bill as an indictment against the CBC is not an accurate assessment of what I am saying. What I continue to articulate is the message of the Black Caucus in terms of the permanent interest of the Black Caucus. It is clear that the CBC, and I've talked about this before, has established the wanting to deal with and address the opportunity and achievement gaps in education, but there are also other issues out there that impact upon the community of African descent. So my question is, how do we decide what is a permanent interest for the Congressional Black Caucus? And if I'm understanding you correctly, Congressman, the permanent interest are the core issues that you've put out in your press reports in terms of the education gap, the health gap, and those types of things. And I'm just trying to understand why the bankruptcy issue was not a permanent interest like the education issue is.
Well, economic advancement is a permanent interest. But a particular bill, there's not a single bill that's mentioned in the Congressional Black Caucus's agenda. That's why once you start listing bills, there's always going to be one or two or three members, maybe 10 members who will differ with you on whether a particular bill advances that agenda.
But
advancing the economic interests of the African American community is a permanent interest of the Congressional Black Caucus. That's why 30-some people out of our membership voted for the bankruptcy bill. But the Congressional Black Caucus itself has never taken a firm position one way or another on the bankruptcy bill.
And why
is that? So what I would suggest to you is that I heard at the top of the show that you're going to have regular people on from the Congressional Black Caucus. I suggest you get one of the people who voted against the bill.
It is my
understand that was not a vote of the Congressional Black Caucus. That person happens to be a member of the Congressional Black Caucus, supports fully the advancement of the economic interests of African American people.
But
judge a person on a vote on one bill, I think is not the appropriate criteria. And I'm not trying to defend these people because we never took a position on it, but to say that the Congressional Black Caucus in some way is ineffective because of one vote, I just think is overstepping. And I came on the show this morning as a representative of the Congressional Black Caucus. I didn't come on as a representative of every single member of the caucus who votes on every bill. I'm not going to try to defend every single vote that members of the Congressional Black Caucus take. If the caucus had taken a unified position on this bill, which we never have, then perhaps you could say, okay, the caucus is not unified. I'm not sure I would agree that you could say it even in that case, because if 30 some of our members vote one way and 10 vote the other way, I would want to dwell on the positive out of that. I certainly wouldn't spend my time dwelling on the negative out of that.
And how then how do we measure you at all if we don't look at your votes in their entirety, if we don't look at the pattern of voting, then how do we measure what it is?
Well, what is
the
pattern? If you find 33 people who voted yes and 10 people who voted no, what would that pattern be, Liz?
Well, when you look at the pattern of, for instance, of Congressman Ford and the other
why don't you call Congressman Ford and get them on your show and talk to them about that? I don't have any problem with that, but they're not voting
of the Black Caucus
on behalf of the Congressional Black Caucus. And, there are a lot more than that in the Democratic Caucus that you would think would, uh, but But the you're not expecting the Democratic caucus even the Republican caucus to vote.
I sure am expecting
100% on every issue.
Well, here's
that's the same thing I hear from my white counterparts. Don't all black people think alike?
Well, Congressman, we just have a couple more minutes here. If that is the case, if we are supposed to look to a vote of the Congressional Black Caucus based upon an issue that the Black Caucus has taken a stance on,
we have not taken a stance.
I know
on
you
have
I know you have
Liz, I told you that five times.
That's not what I said, Congressman.
Okay.
What I said was, if we as citizens out here are to evaluate the Congressional Black Caucus, I don't think that most people out here would know that the way that you evaluate the Black Caucus, the Congressional Black Caucus, is to see what they've said that they are going to take a stance on and then look at their votes on that. Most people look at the Congressional Black Caucus as we look at the NAACP and other black organizations out here.
Have you found that the NAACP is unified on every issue?
That's not what I said. I said we look at them like we look at other black organizations out here in terms of how they respond to issues that impact on black people, not whether they have taken a stance on this issue, because all of these issues are impacting the black community. And it sounds like a little bit of trickery to say that well, the Black Caucus didn't take a position on this, so you can't evaluate us as the Black Caucus on this issue because we didn't take a position on it. But you're members of the Black Caucus, and those issues impact upon black people.
I'm not sure exactly what it is you're asking me to respond to. You got 33 members of the Congressional Black Caucus who voted one way on a bill and 10 people who didn't. And you want me to spend all of my time worrying about the 10 who didn't, rather than worrying about the 33 who did. And I'm not going to do that. I'm sorry.
Okay, I understand.
I mean, this is your show, and you can try to project it as if somehow those 10 people on this issue are speaking for the Congressional Black Caucus. They were not. Neither were the 33 who voted for, because the Congressional Black Caucus never took a position on this particular bill.
Got it. Okay. And I want to thank you very much.
I thank you for inviting me.
My pleasure. Take care. Listen, folks, we're going to take a break. This is Liz Brown. Wake Up Call. We'll be back after this. Stay with us.
You've been listening to the best of the Wake Up Call. Stick around for more following these messages. Good morning, St. Louis. 37 minutes after the hour of 8 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. Let's take a quick look at your traffic and your weather, and then we'll be back to more of the best of the Wake Up Call programming. Eastbound 40 from 70 through Callahan, which is out past Wentzville. Look for that highway to be closed due to an accident. An overturned dump truck at Callahan Road is causing some delays. And you're going to see a diversion detours to get around that area. Just use caution, slow down, give yourself a break. Eastbound 70 from Lake St. Louis through 79, look for stop-and-go traffic due to people who are avoiding that 4061 highway. Northbound 270 at 55 and Doherty Ferry, look for stop-and-go traffic. Eastbound 5570 from 64 into 203, look for paving operations going on there. Eastbound 5570 from Poplar Street Bridge back through 64. It'll be closed to one lane or two lanes due to off-peak hours due to paving operations, so expect some slowdowns. Westbound 5570 from 3rd Street into the Poplar Street Bridge, you've got slow traffic. Eastbound 44 from Soccer Park to 270, you've got slow traffic there as well. Southbound 270 from 70 through Dorset, expect heavy volume going on there. and westbound 270 from Old Halls Ferry into West Florissant. Look for delays. And westbound Kingbridge traffic's moving well into the landing at this hour. That is a look at your traffic. Now let's take a look, quick look at your forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Thursday. For today, look forward to partly sunny this morning. Mostly cloudy by this afternoon. 50% chance of showers, high around 90. This evening, showers and thunderstorms, likely lows in the upper 60s. Wednesday and Thursday, pretty much mirror image both days. Partly cloudy with a high in the lower to mid 80s. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have clouds, 74 degrees. Lambert Fields reporting clouds and 77. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown, the best of Liz Brown. That's up next. Take another look at your news, traffic, and weather in the top of the 9 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU, your station for the issues that matter most to you.
This is Dr. Laura Schlesinger. Join me weekday afternoons from 2 to 4 on AM 920 WGNU. And I look forward to hearing from you. If you have problems with a personal, work, or family relationship, call me at 1-800-DR-LAURA. That's 1-800-DR-LAURA for the issues that matter most. It's AM 920 WGNU. And for the personal issues that matter most, join me, Dr. Laura, now from 2 to 4 every weekday afternoon. Then go do the right thing.
This is Phil Person of Person Roofing. I'd like to introduce to you one of my customers, Joe Scoggins. Mr. Scoggins, how long ago did we work on your property?
It was approximately 8 to 9 years ago, Mr. Persons.
Okay, have you had any problems with your roof since that time?
Well, actually, about 3 weeks ago, I called you, and there was some water damage that was caused as a result of the storm last fall.
Okay.
And you were out the following day to do the repair work, and it was done in such a professional way that I would recommend you to any and everyone.
So how much did we charge you?
It was free, and it was done within a matter of 3 hours.
All right.
So I called you one day, and you were out the very next day, you and your son and his assistant, and you went up on the roof, and you accomplished the task within a matter of 3 hours.
This is Phil Person of Person Roofing. Our service starts when we complete your roof. Our number is 361-7127. You can call us day or night. 361-7127.
Summertime, and the living is easy, right? Not if you don't get your family reunion t-shirts done on time. Here's a tip. Call Robert Guy and Associates, 421-3200. They specialize in family reunion t-shirts and softball team t-shirts. In fact, Robert Guy and Associates will put together fabulous t-shirts for all occasions. Here's the address, 2006 Salisbury. The number is 421-3200. Robert Guy and Associates, your t-shirt specialist. And check this out. If you mention you heard this on the Liz Brown Show, you'll get 10% off. It doesn't get any better. 421-3200, Robert Guy and Associates.
Are you one of those people who look at somebody who's big-boned and think that's just a euphemism for Twinkie enriched? Are you sick of the idea that we can go to war in Serbia and bomb the crud out of them, but we should stay out of Iraq? If the whole entire pop culture thing, Britney Spears, Super Bowl commercials, and all that stuff gets on your nerves, well, guess what? It gets on mine, too. So if you want someone to listen and understand, listen to me, Brett Rosen, every Tuesday, 10 a.m. on WGNU, 920 a.m.
The struggle for fairness on the award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown.
Now we take you back to the best of the Wake Up Call right here on AM 920 WGNU.
Welcome back. Welcome back to the Wake Up Call. This is Liz Brown, living my life as an African and loving it. 454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. You need to get up. You need to get to me. We have much, much, much to talk about. 454-0400 is my phone number. And as we watch the news, look at the news, and every day there seems to be attempts to redefine, right in front of us, redefine the world that we live in. And history is being changed immediately. You don't have to wait 20 years, 30 years, 40 years from now just to watch history being changed. It's changing right in front of us. And a case in point, a good example of attempts to change history is a recent article that came out of the Washington Post about Trent Lott. And to talk to us about the ever-changing history right in front of our faces, a redefining of history right in front of our faces, is Steve Rendell, senior analyst with Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting, joining us from New York City. Steve, good morning.
Good morning, Liz. It's great to be with you.
It's good to have you here. So it's right in front of us.
Right in front
of this. Talk to us about start with the beginning. Start with what the Washington Post said about Trent Lott back in December of 2002.
Well, back in December of 2002, the Washington Post was doing a really good job in covering Trent Lott's various episodes of sort of racist outbursts, or I think it'd be best to describe them as episodes where he got caught in racism, because of course he wasn't just racist twice; he's been racist for his whole career. But back in 2002, let's remember, Trent Lott attended the 100th birthday party of Senator Strom Thurmond, and while Trent Lott was there, he saluted, Trent saluted his home state's support for Strom Thurmond's 1948 presidential run on the Dixiecrat platform. And what he said there was, Lott said, "I want to say this about my state. When Strom Thurmond ran for president, we voted for him. We're proud of him. And if the rest of the country had followed our lead, we wouldn't have had all these problems over all these years either," close quote.
So, now, I mean, there are just so many things wrong with that statement. To say that you were proud of your vote for Strom Thurmond as running for the president on the racist platform that he ran on, just that.
Well, you know, it wasn't just a lot of the news accounts back in the time in 2002 pointed out that that Strom Thurmond's Dixiecrat run in 1948, that the main platform that he ran on was segregation.
Right.
What a lot of those stories left out, I did a lot of research on this, was that the second pillar on the platform of Strom Thurmond's platform was opposition to federal anti-lynching legislation.
We're
talking about some pretty serious stuff here. Especially when you hear Lott describing, saying that we wouldn't have had all these problems over all these years had the country elected Strom Thurmond. But this wasn't, Liz, this wasn't the first racist scandal that Lott had been trapped in, had been caught at. And back in the end of 1998, FAIR actually was central to feeding information that Lott had been a long-term associate of the CCC, the Council of Conservative Citizens,
mm-hmm.
a group that grew out of what they called the Uptown Plan, the old white citizens councils that ran throughout the South. Actually, St. Louis, I believe, is the capital, is the headquarters of the current CCC. I know it is a headquarters if it's not the one. I think Citizens Informer, which is their newspaper, may be published out of there, but I'm not positive about that. But
let's not linger there.
Yeah. But back in, they're everywhere.
Yes, they are.
So you have to just remember that. But anyway, the paper, the Washington Post, just a couple of weeks, not even 2 weeks ago, on April 14th, ran an article about Trent Lott. You know, Trent Lott has been trying to rehabilitate his image because, you know, he'd first had this near-fatal incident in 1999, 19, late 1998. And then finally, a fatal incident. Let's be careful how we describe that, though. His 2002 scandal, which lost him the House Republican Majority Leader position.
Correct.
Now, most people wouldn't consider it a fatal episode to have ended up a senator in good standing in the United States Senate. But that's what happened to Trent Lott. He's been shopping around trying to rehabilitate himself. And this Washington Post article, which is so ironic because they did such great work in 1999 and in 2002, but now the Washington Post seems to be helping Trent Lott gloss over his racist history. They ran a piece in which they hardly dealt at all with that history.
Well, and to be specific, Steve, the history that you just defined, they reduced it down into one single sentence, and they said that Lott noted, not that he supported, not that he embraced, not that he said that's how he voted and everybody else voted. They wrote, Lott noted Thurman's 1948 run for president on the anti-civil rights Dixiecrat ticket and said that, quote, we wouldn't have had all these problems over all these years had Thurman won. Lott insisted he was just trying to flatter the old man, but once the line received the widespread media attention, it triggered a national furor. It was the line that triggered it? That's what the word
meant. Yes, exactly. And you know,
it's the line's fault?
The Post reporter on April 14th, just 9 days ago, said, referred to this outburst when he congratulated his state for supporting Strom Thurmond's segregation and pro-lynching ticket. The Washington Post reporter, Shelley Murray, recalled that outburst as being, quote, what some saw as nostalgic words about segregation. Now, in our view, of course, some would interpret them that way, namely anyone who'd heard or read Lott's words and knew the history of Thurman's campaign.
Well, the some that would interpret that are wearing sheets.
That's right. The some who wouldn't interpret
are wearing sheets.
And to leave it open to question, just truths.
Absolute truths. And here's the other piece of this article that written by Shayla Murray on April 14th of this year. They refer to this outrageously racist statement by Trent Lott as a little bump in the road.
Yeah, that's the way actually Lott described it. But the Washington Post puts that in the headline.
Yeah.
And they don't
condemn him for reducing it to a little bump in the road.
That's right. It looks like revisionist history. It looks like they're trying to define this down.
And we have to take a break. I am talking to Steve Rendell, Senior Analyst, Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting, joining us from New York City. I'm Liz Brown. This is the Wake Up Call. Stay with us. We have much, much, much to talk about.
You're listening to the best of the Wake Up Call. Stick around. More to come following these messages.
About Golden Grocer Natural Market? It's locally owned and operated for over 30 years and serving and meeting your health needs by ensuring the best quality and selection in vitamin supplements and organic groceries. Golden Grocer Natural Market has the largest loose herb selection around. You can also get your grains and natural beauty items as well. Their staff is friendly, knowledgeable, and committed to helping you on your journey to improved and enhanced health. Golden Grocer believes that the healthiest goal is achieving balance in every area of your life. So, live your life like it's golden, and let Golden Grocer help you along the way. Golden Grocer, Natural Market, 335 North Euclid, right there in the Central West End. Open 10 a.m. to 7 p.m., Monday through Saturday, and Sunday 12 to 5. Golden Grocer, 367-0405. That's 367-0405.
Recently in St. Louis, some changes were made in healthcare providers, and we at ConnectCare want you to know that sometimes change can be good. ConnectCare, still connected to the community.
Connect Care is now your specialty care clinic hub. If you or your loved one is dealing with kidney disease, you can contact one of Connect Care's renal specialists at our renal clinic, dedicated to improving the quality of life and providing optimal care for patients with chronic and acute renal disease. At Connect Care, we have 14 specialty care clinics to serve your healthcare needs. Our specialty care clinic hub includes specialty clinics dealing with arthritis, ENT, GI, orthopedics, and a women's specialty clinic. At Connect Care, the physicians and staff at our specialty clinics are committed to the philosophy that the best care is provided by those with the greatest commitment to their community. Connect Care, still connected to the community.
This is Dr. Laura Schlesinger. Join me weekday afternoons from 2 till 4 on AM 920 WGNU. And I look forward to hearing from you. If you have problems with a personal work or family relationship, call me at 1-800-DR-LAURA. That's 1-800-DR-LAURA for the issues that matter most. It's AM 920 WGNU. And for the personal issues that matter most, join me, Dr. Laura, now from 2 to 4 every weekday afternoon. Then go do the right thing.
Head Thumping Talk Radio with Brett Rosen has a new time, Tuesdays from 10 until noon, right here on AM 920 WGNU, where we discuss the issues that matter most to you.
Big Brother is watching, and we're watching Big Brother on the award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown.
Now back to the best of the Wake Up Call. Stick around for ABC News, your local news, traffic, and weather following the top of the hour.
Welcome back to the Wake Up Call. This is Liz Brown, living my life as an African and loving it. 454-0400 is my phone number. Get up or get to me. We have much, much, much to talk about. I have with me Steve Rendell, senior analyst with Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting, joining us from New York City. Steve, welcome back. We're talking about this amazing revisionist history that's taking place in front of our eyes, Steve. When we look at the efforts to redefine the Lott and to clean up his act, what do you suppose the motive behind that could be?
Well, I'm not sure if this is a pattern or not. As I said, Tom Edsel, a reporter for the Washington Post, did great work. I gave him material. I gave him documents I'd uncovered back in 1999, and he was on the story in 2002 when Lott made the comments about Strom Thurmond. So they're capable of doing some good work on this. I don't know if this is this one reporter and an editor working with Shelley Murray or not. Yesterday the Washington Post ombudsman reacted to our alert with about 300-400 words saying that the Washington Post ombudsman is named Michael Gettler, and Gettler said he didn't like being inundated with 700 letters generated by FAIR.
But his job is to be inundated.
But he made FAIR points, he said, and he didn't agree with all of them, but he thought we'd made some good points. But I think if we have one point above all others, it's that there's a gaping double standard here. When prominent white people are caught in racist scandals or are alleged to be in racist scandals, what happens is you get this sort of softening of them after a few years. Well, let's forgive and forget. Let's not forget the fact that when prominent African-American leaders are alleged to be associated with racist people or to said racist or anti-Semitic or any kind of bigoted comments, that every black leader in the country is forced to stand up and denounce those associations.
And ask Jesse Jackson about that.
How long has the New York Times been going to lunch on Jackson's comments that he made about New York back in 1984?
It's
just a gaping double standard.
And the other piece of this is that the tone of this article is that, you know, this line about Lott apologized repeatedly for his remark, appeared on black entertainment television to swear alliance to civil rights, including affirmative action, and called on colleagues to explain and apologize. And then the line that is the most telling part of this, but nothing worked.
You know, well, but it's an unforgivable thing. I mean, the fact of the matter is that you're embracing racism. Why am I supposed to forgive and let that go?
And he, just a few years before, he'd been lying about his long-term association with the CCC. It's important to remember, the other most prominent member, and I don't want to allege for sure that Trent Lott was a member of the CCC, but most of his family members say, what? He says he's not? It would have been a surprise if he wasn't where we grew up. Mm. It was like everybody was in it. Mm. But Byron de la Beckwith was a member of the CCC.
Yes.
He's the one of the conspirators who murdered Medgar Evers.
That's right.
This is not, there's a reason they called it the Uptown Klan, or the Klan in suits. This is a serious group, and Lott repeatedly lied through a spokesperson to the press about his long-term association with that group just a few years before. So he's got a lot more to apologize for than just supposedly trying to flatter an old man.
And then the efforts that he's engaging in now are awfully scary, because it looks like he's trying to get his gig back. He's the one that helped pass this bankruptcy bill. He's the one that helped pass this class action bill. He's trying to get his gig back, isn't he?
Yeah, and, well, he was good at it, too. He was very good at wrangling the other Republican senators. I'm not sure that, I think he was probably better at it than Bill Frist is now, in the same position. Frist has been getting in trouble from time to time. One of the funny things about the Washington Post thing is...
You've been listening to the best of the Wake-Up Call. Stick around for more following ABC News and your local news that's on the way. This is AM 920 WGNU, your station for the issues that matter most to you.
That not everyone is sharing in this city's splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever, more families in trouble, more and more people who need help but can't find it.
For the issues that matter most, it's AM 920 WGNU, Granite City, St. Louis.
The latest from ABC News. I'm Karen Chase. An Iraq progress report due later this week could spell trouble for the White House. More from ABC's David Wright.
Former Democratic Congressman Lee Hamilton, one of the leaders of the Iraq study group, says the White House is under serious pressure to change course.
I think the White House has got their backs to the wall. They've got some very tough choices to make. And the beginning of wisdom on Iraq is to know that there are no good options. There were not good options 6 months ago. There are worse options today.
And the White House is caught between military commanders who are pressing for more time and political allies who don't want to deal with a campaign liability.
The heat goes on across the East Coast. ABC's Lindsay Davis tells us how people are chilling out in New York.
With temperatures nearing the three-digit mark in the Central Park pool, many New Yorkers are responding to the rising mercury by lowering themselves into water.
If you're not near water, then you got problems. Then you're really going to get overheated.
Several parts of the country haven't seen heat like this in 20 years.
Louisiana Republican Senator David Vitter is apologizing after his name turned up on the D.C. Madam's client list. Vitter says he's sorry for a serious sin, though he says God and his wife have already forgiven him. The man at the eye of the storm, the director of the National Hurricane Center, has gone on leave days after many of his employees staged a mutiny, accusing him of crying wolf when warning of dire consequences if an aging satellite died. Add another suspect supplement to the list. Researchers now suspect people who take selenium to prevent diabetes are actually increasing their risk of developing it by more than 50%. The winner will be declared today in the Battle of the Springfields. More than a dozen towns by that name have been vying for the right to host the premiere of the Simpsons movie. In the show's 18-year run, characters have never made it clear what state they were in, other than perhaps a state of confusion. This is ABC News.
Mom and Dad always told us, make sure you put 20% down on your home. But maybe you're like a lot of other people. You don't have it. Can you still buy? Yes. But should you? I'll be back in a moment with advice from my book, The Millionaire Zone.
Today's advice from Jennifer Openshaw is sponsored by LendingTree. Whether you're looking to refinance your mortgage or want a home equity loan, visit LendingTree.com today and get up to 4 real offers in minutes. Our loan specialists are there 24/7 to help you choose the right loan. When banks compete, you win. See website or call for sponsorship details and licensing.
If you've got the cash to put 20% down on the home, do it. On a $300,000 house, that's $60,000 up front. Yes, there are ways to get around this down payment, like with zero or little money down, but you'll have to pay for it. You'll have the cost of private mortgage insurance, or you'll have to take out a second loan with a higher interest rate. Still, put down whatever you can. Even if you have to pay mortgage insurance, at least it's now tax deductible. Plus, you'll be building up equity.
Pop singer Avril Lavigne denies she stole one of her most popular songs. ABC's Aaron Katursky has the story.
Avril Lavigne's Girlfriend, two songwriters say, is identical in lyric, meter, and rhythm to their song, I Want to Be Your Boyfriend. It was performed by the Rubinoos in 1979. Songwriters say this is no cosmic coincidence, and they're suing. Lavigne says, whatever. She wrote on her website the songs have no musical similarities, and she has not ripped anyone off. Aaron Katursky, ABC News, New York.
A Cape Cod man trying to get out of jury duty apparently protested too much. When he claimed on his questionnaire he was homophobic, racist, and a habitual liar, he infuriated the judge so much he referred the man to prosecutors for possible charges. The judge said he'd never seen such a brazen case. I'm Karen Chase, ABC News.
Now, the local report from the WGNU Newsroom.
Good morning, St. Louis. This is Patrick Berensmeyer with your WGNU news update for the 9 o'clock hour. In the news this Tuesday, Sam Shelton has been moved to a prison near Chicago. The 27-year-old former teacher had been jailed at Menard Correctional Facility in Chester, but was transferred to the Stateville Correctional Center in Joliet last week. Shelton pleaded guilty to attempted murder in an attack on 18-year-old Ashley Reeves last year. He was sentenced to 20 years in prison. A corrections department spokesman wouldn't say why Shelton was moved. Laclede gas customers could be seeing a rate increase soon. Under a settlement with the Missouri Public Service Commission and other customer groups, rates would rise an average of $36 a year. Details of the agreement were filed yesterday afternoon, and it must be approved by the five-member commission. If the 3% rate hike is approved, Laclede would see a $38.6 million boost in annual revenue. Terms of the settlement call for the new rates to take effect on August 1st. Finally this hour, two people who were injured by pyrotechnics at a Beyoncé concert got a surprise visit from the singer. The accident happened Sunday night as the show at Scott Trade Center was beginning. Reportedly, pyrotechnics meant for the stage spilled into the front row. Bailey Stiles of Joplin and Chastity Rogers of Belleville were taken to Barnes Jewish Hospital with minor injuries. Soon after the concert, Beyoncé stopped by the hospital and met with the fans for about 45 minutes. That's your look at local news for the 9 o'clock hour. I'm Patrick Brandmeyer, bringing you the news that matters most to you.
Good morning, St. Louis. 6 minutes after the hour of 9 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU, I'm Howard Morton. Let's take a final look at your traffic for this Tuesday morning, as well as your weather. Eastbound 40 from 70 East and Callahan out past Winsville. Look for the highway to be closed due to an accident. An overturned dump truck at Callahan Road has caused stop traffic. Find another way around if you can, or look for big delays as there are a number of detours that are going on this hour. Northbound 270 between Gravois and Doherty Ferry. Look for slow traffic. Westbound 40 from Hanley through 170. Road construction has left lane closed. Eastbound 5570 from Poplar Street through 64, and then again from 64 through 203. Look for paving operations going on throughout the morning, and you may see 1 to 2 lanes closed during the off-peak hours, so expect delays and just use caution to slow down. Westbound 40 between Boyle and Kings Highway, look for, and eastbound 40 between Kings Highway and Boyle, look for road construction. Two lanes are closed in either direction. East and westbound 40 between Oakland and Hampton, look for road construction there as well. That's causing some delays. Just use some caution there. Westbound 5570 onto the Poplar Street Bridge is moving well. Westbound Kingbridge traffic is moving well. And all your other approaches seem to be running smoothly this hour now. Now let's take a look at your forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Thursday. Partly sunny today, becoming mostly cloudy, 50% chance of showers with a high around 90. This evening, showers and thunderstorms likely. Lows in the upper 60s. Wednesday and Thursday, partly cloudy both days. Highs in the low to mid 80s. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have 77 degrees, cloudy skies. Lambert Field is reporting the same. Stay tuned now for more of the best of the wake-up call. Liz Brown is out today. She should be back in tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. Until then, enjoy more selections from the best of the wake-up call. We'll take another look at your news and your weather in the top of the 10 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU, your station for the issues that matter most to you.
I'm hearing revolution in the air.
Now we bring you the best of the wake-up call right here on AM 920 WGNU.
But the hard truth is that not everyone...
Welcome back to the Wake Up Call. This is Liz Brown, living my life as an African and loving it. 454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. You need to get up. You need to get to me. We are broadcasting live, as always, www.wgnu.net. That's live on the World Wide Web from Xenia to Zimbabwe. You can catch us here on the Wake Up Call. Earlier this week, we had, or I guess that would be yesterday, we had a discussion about the fact that lethal injections as a means of killing people by our government do not do what people think that they do, that it's a painless death and a death that is consistent with our Constitution that mandates that the government cannot engage in cruel and unusual punishment. And since this report has come out, it will be interesting to see how the world that we live in responds to that. And we need to talk about what the death penalty says about our country. We need to talk about how our country responds to the fact that if we only recently, a few handful of months ago, decided as a nation, or the Supreme Court decided, that this nation would no longer execute juveniles. That's only been in our recent world history. We need to talk about the death penalty, what it says about us, what it is, and does it work? To join us in this conversation, we have joining us from Southern California, Mike Farrell. Mike Farrell, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm outstanding. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Thanks.
And I appreciate you getting up this morning to join us since you're on the West Coast and we're here in Mid-America. I appreciate that.
You're welcome. It is a little earlier here.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Mike, everybody knows you as an actor and as anybody that turns on the television sees MASH, and they know that you were part of that. But what I would like to know, and I think what people would really like to know, is that how did you come to be connected with the issue of the death penalty? Is it something that you knew as a child or knew as a young person that you had this opposition to?
Well, certainly, I was raised in the Catholic Church. I was taught as a Christian that killing was wrong. Therefore, it never seemed to me to be right that the state could decide for itself that killing was only wrong for other people, and that if other people did something that was inappropriate, that the state could demonstrate its power by killing people. So there was something just sort of innately wrong about it to me. But that really didn't make me active in any particular way until I was a little older, and when I became I hate to use the term celebrity, but when I became somewhat known in the world as a result of my work, there were opportunities to sign petitions or make declarations about different things, and I agreed to sign some paper saying that I opposed the death penalty, and that led to some people contacting me, and of course these things, you know,
get a life of their own.
They build on themselves, mm-hmm. Yes.
So is there a particular case that caught your attention or anything as you were just moving through life, as all of us do? Is there a case that caught your eye?
Well, originally what happened was that a man by the name of Joe Engel, a minister from the Church of Christ in Nashville, contacted me when I was doing MASH and explained to me that he ran an organization called the Southern Coalition on Jails and Prisons, and that the death penalty by then had been declared unconstitutional in 72, been reinstated in 76, which was just shortly before he and I talked, and that, as he put it, the machine was beginning to roll again, and that there was going to be a bloodbath in the country, and I could be helpful. So I went with him a while after that, down to Tennessee, visited Tennessee State Prison, death row there.
What did you see when you were down there?
Well, you know, I saw what sort of everybody, I suppose, understands that you see, but nobody really thinks too much about it. I saw a group of men, they were all men at the facility I visited first, who were largely black, some uncommunicative, many really terrifically appreciative of the fact that I had come to see them, some, you know, just like people you'd run into on the street, but they were essentially no different from you or I. They were just people, and they were not the sort of fang-toothed, drooling monsters that we had all been taught to believe were separated out from society so they could be killed because they were dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
Now, these were men in cells and behind bars, and obviously most of them, if not all of them, had done terrible things, but they were still human beings, and it was an eerie feeling to me to be there and talk to them and hear from them and have a sense of their humanness. I left there a little wiser, I think, and very troubled by the idea that these men were caged up, penned in, and were waiting on the whim of the state to make a determination as to when they would be ushered into the room we went to next, which was the execution chamber, and to be strapped into this ugly chair and electrocuted. I just thought, God, this just makes no sense to me at all. So I worked with Joe for a few years, traveling back and forth with him around the country, and then eventually got caught up with one of the people who had worked with Joe in his organization, and then went off to Virginia and started her own organization, a woman by the name of Marie Deans, who started the Virginia Coalition of Jails and Prisons. And with Marie, I got involved in the case of a young man named Joe Giratano, who was scheduled to die, and she took me there, introduced me to Joe at their death row, and explained that it, in her view and how she had come to the view that Joe was innocent. So that was a case that I got involved in trying to stop the execution, and we succeeded after some years of struggle with the governor to stop that execution. He commuted the sentence. He did not commute the sentence in the way we wanted so that Joe would be free today, but Joe was not killed. He remains in prison, and we continue to try to find get him a new trial.
And, Mike, this was back in the 70s, right, when you started started this. Would it be fair to say that the climate in the 70s was a little different than the climate is in 2005 in terms of addressing this issue? Would that be fair?
In many ways.
Well, talk to us about how different it is today, and I also would like to get your view on, are you surprised by the incredible change from 1970-something to 2000-and-something?
Well, let me say I'm gratified by the change. I'm surprised is probably the wrong word, because I've been working with so many people over time who have been so dedicated that there is a sense in my view, in me, that the American people are fundamentally fair,
mm-hmm.
if they understand the situation. And the struggle has been to get people to understand the situation, understand the reality of the death system, as opposed to the kind of abstract concept of an eye for an eye, or however it is people justify wanting to kill other people or allowing the death of other people. So over time, with the advent of so many courageous people who have stood up and spoken out on this issue and taken positions that have been deeply unpopular. Sister Helen Prejean, for example.
We've had her on the show. She's wonderful.
Isn't she?
She is amazing.
Yeah, she's really quite an extraordinary woman. Tim Robinson, Susan Sarandon, who made the movie from her book,
mm-hmm.
her first book.
Dead Man Walking.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And the extraordinary phalanx of dedicated people in the ranks of law. Some of them wardens of prisons. I don't know if you know Don Cabana.
No, I don't.
To be the warden of Parchman State Prison in Mississippi, and presided over executions and determined for himself that they were not only killing innocent people, but that the whole process made no sense. So there are just these heroic pioneers who really dedicated themselves to demonstrating the wrong-headedness of the system, and working with them has been a great privilege for me. And so over time, we've just been able to open people's eyes a little bit at a time to the fact that the system is simply unfair and simply inappropriate, and and more to the point, even for people who believe that states killing people is appropriate under certain circumstances, when they get it that it operates unfairly, that it's racist at its base, that it's based on a system that punishes people for being poor rather than being guilty, that it's based on a system that is full rife with police and prosecutorial misconduct and a kind of political impetus, really, rather than an impetus toward justice. So it's been the raising of that awareness, and probably I think the thing that has made the biggest difference in recent years has been the growing awareness of people that there are innocent people trapped on death row, and now we're learning even innocent people having been killed.
And in terms of the political climate for this, the media attention to this, Mike, is it different in the year 2005 than it was in the 70s? I mean, how was your participation when you were involved in this in the 70s viewed by the media? Because I'm clear about what is said in the media often in the year 2005.
Well, sure. Originally, of course, the if you just go by the poll numbers in the 70s, there was a huge support for the death penalty. Then in the 80s, it grew, actually, through the pressure of politics. Into 85 and 90, we were at 85% of the people of the United States who said they supported the death system. Now, again, this is a function of people being asked, do you believe in the death penalty or not? And they'll say, or do you support the death penalty or not? And they'll, you know, they'll think, well, God, I don't want anybody coming into my home and raping and killing my family, so yeah, we should kill the dirty bastards. And so at that time, the media approach to us was one of scorn. How could you be in favor of this, or in favor of, or opposing the death penalty? How could you be in favor of killing, you know, essentially? How could you be in favor of killers, dirty, slobbering, fang-toothed monsters who go out and do these terrible things? And our point, or my point certainly, was I'm not in favor of obviously violent crime. What I'm in favor of is a society living up to the standards that it maintains that it holds, and realizing that people are fundamentally people. Some do bad things, yes, but that doesn't make them any less human than you or I. But, you know, those kind of arguments fell on deaf ears for a long time until little by little we began to make progress in alerting people to the dangers inherent in the system and to the fact that executing people through electricity the first time and then through the gas chamber was fundamentally cruel, and that we, on some level, were putting ourselves in the same position of the people we were condemning by stooping to their level, if you will. And, you know, it's a long process, but over time now, as you suggest, the media has become much more open to talking about this system and talking about the inefficiency of it and the inappropriateness of it.
In terms of the world that you travel in, the world that puts you in contact with other celebrities, if you will, how do your colleagues respond to this issue? Is it any different than the rest of us out here in America respond to it?
Not really. In my community, the community of, you know, people in the business, there's still a great fear that getting associated with a controversial issue will somehow have a negative impact on your career. So it has taken some time here as well as there to awaken people to the urgent need and to demonstrate that there really isn't anything to be terribly afraid of. Originally, it took some courage for people to stand up. More and more people are coming out and saying, you know, I've always thought this made no sense. And that's been an exciting thing for me to see. So now we have far more people who are willing to stand up and take a position than we did a number of years ago. And I think that's true across the board, whether it be, you know, a political issue or the war or, you know, various issues pertinent to the social conditions we find ourselves facing today.
Well, one of the things that I think is just extraordinary that's happened out in California is Kamala Harris.
Oh, isn't it
Tell the audience about this extraordinary story. It's just, like, I want that to happen here so bad.
Oh, I'm with you, yeah. Now, Kamala Harris is a fabulous woman, young, gorgeous, but not, doesn't necessarily mean anything, but the fact is she is a young, gorgeous black woman who ran for the office of district attorney in San Francisco a couple of years ago on a platform of opposing the death penalty, and she won.
And she said she would never, ever, ever, under any circumstances, ask for it.
That's right. She would never execute anybody. And shortly after she was elected, a police officer was murdered in the city. And she was roundly criticized and derided for her refusal to call for the death penalty in that case. And typically, politicians leaped on the bandwagon and called her this, that, and the other thing, and said that it was unjust and unfair that a police officer's death must be responded to by the death penalty. And she said no. She said, I was elected on the basis of my position on the death penalty and my position on other things. Kamala is a really quite extraordinary young woman, very, very smart, wonderfully articulate, very well schooled in the law, knows what she's doing. And she said, everybody gets lost in this concept of being tough on crime. She says, I think we have to deal with crime, and we have to deal with it realistically. But she said, instead of being tough on crime, let's be smart on crime.
And I think one of the things also that comes out of when a person like a police officer gets killed and you have this hue and cry to get the person that got the police officer, it separates us even further. It somehow suggests that the life of a police officer is a life that must be avenged above and beyond a grandmother who was murdered in Compton someplace.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And there's a terrible imbalance about that. But there's, on some level, people say, well, these are the arbiters, you know, these are the people that are standing on that thin line between us and the violent forces in our society.
But we're all valuable, aren't we?
Absolutely, and to ascribe that kind of authority, to choose a word, and power to the officer of the law is, I think, to buy into the notion that there's an us versus them here in this society.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly, there are people who, for whatever reason, act out in a way that's unacceptable, and those people have to be dealt with. But I don't think that it serves us as a society to say that there are those of us who are so powerful, so important, and so meaningful that if they are killed, we must stoop back to this level, this sort of cave person level of meeting violence with violence to show how important those people are. That simply is wrongheaded, I think.
We're going to take a break, folks. We're talking to Mike Farrell, joining us from Southern California. This is Liz Brown, the wake-up call. We're taking a break. We'll be back after that. Stay with us.
You're listening to the best of the wake-up call. Stick around for more following these messages.
Not if you don't get your family reunion T-shirts done on time. Here's a tip. Call Robert Guy and Associates, 421-3200. They specialize in family reunion T-shirts and softball team T-shirts. In fact, Robert Guy and Associates will put together fabulous T-shirts for all occasions. Here's the address. 2006 Salisbury. The number is 421-3200. Robert Guy and Associates, your T-shirt specialist. And check this out. If you mention you heard this on the Liz Brown Show, you'll get 10% off. It doesn't get any better. 421-3200, Robert Guy and Associates.
This is Phil Person of Person Roofing. I'd like to introduce to you one of my customers, Joe Scoggins. Mr. Scoggins, how long ago did we work on your property?
It was approximately 8 to 9 years ago, Mr. Persons.
Okay, have you had any problems with your roof since that time?
Well, actually, about 3 weeks ago, I called you, and there was some water damage that was caused as a result of the storm last fall.
Okay.
And you were out the following day to do the repair work. And it was done in such a professional way that I would recommend you to any and everyone.
So how much did we charge you?
It was free, and it was done within a matter of 3 hours.
All right.
So I called you one day, and you were out the very next day, you and your son and his assistant, and you went up on the roof, and you accomplished the task within a matter of 3 hours.
This is Phil Person of Person Roofing. Our service starts when we complete your roof. Our number is 361-7127. You can call us day or night. 361-7127.
This is Decent Guy Don, the original conspiracy hunter. You know, the guy that keeps you up to date on all the good guys and the bad guys out of the Council of Foreign Relations, the Bilderbergers, the Illuminati crowd, and assorted other characters who are squeezing the life out of our great American country. Tune in every evening to hear the thunderous crash as I pull the linchpin from the foundations of the House of the New World Order as it crashes down at 7 p.m. Monday through Friday with the conspiracy hunter right here at WGNU 920 a.m.
Connect Care, still connected to the community. Sometimes it seems like things are changing so fast that it's hard to keep up and hard to keep track. At Connect Care, we want you to know that yes, there have been some changes, and yes, we are still connected to the community. At Connect Care, we still have a retail pharmacy open 8 to 5 Monday through Friday. At Connect Care, we still provide transportation to patients that qualify. At Connect Care, we still provide access to in-house laboratory services. At Connect Care, we still provide some of the region's best board-certified doctors. At Connect Care, we still provide urgent care. And at Connect Care, we still see patients on a sliding fee scale. Yes, changes have been made at Connect Care, but we're still connected to you. Connect Care, still connected to the community.
Real life. On the cutting edge, it's the award-winning wake-up call with Liz Brown.
We now take you back to the best of the wake-up call right here on AM 920 WGNU. Stick around, more the best of the wake-up call, then after the top of the hour, it's Head Thumpin' Talk Radio with Brett Rosen himself. That follows the news. This is AM 920 WGNU.
Just a little too long. Now it's time for me to be strong. Hello, morning.
Hello, morning. This is Liz Brown. We are talking this morning to Mike Farrell, joining us from Southern California. Mike, welcome back.
Thanks.
When we were talking before the break, you were making the comment about how the climate has changed and the observation and the understanding of the death system. I want to use this moment now to go to another way that the climate has changed, and that's with the war in Iraq and 9/11. Does the atmosphere that is has been created as a result of the decision by this government to invade Iraq, do you think that that's going to have an impact on the forward movement of the anti-death penalty movement?
It's an interesting question as to how people are going to connect the two, and I'm not sure they will consciously.
Well, I just mean kind of like in the intolerance that we're having at this point in our history.
Yeah, I'm sorry, the intolerance?
The intolerance with the war in Iraq and the us.
The intolerance of the war.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Well, at first I think we have to look at the intolerance of the dissent. You know, those of us who opposed the war, spoke out against it, were pilloried, as you well know, or were attacked and viciously assaulted for our lack of patriotism, for being Saddam lovers, for being anti-American, for being French, you know, all that garbage.
Isn't that amazing?
It was amazing. And I think it's important to understand, for your audience certainly to understand, that it was an orchestrated campaign that was begun by the administration's lies and the administration's lashing out at people who called them on their baloney. When Ari Fleischer said people should watch what they say and watch what they do, one of the most fundamentally un-American statements from a White House spokesperson in years. So when the opposition to the war originally appeared, there was this extraordinary attack from the right wing and through the media and through other venues that that was attempting to shut us down and to, by definition, continue the support and the momentum for the war, which sadly succeeded, so that we've now come to the place where we've lost, you know, hundreds of Americans and the people who were in support of the Americans, the few nations that supported the Americans, and tens of thousands of Iraqis in an unnecessary and in brutal and absolutely wrong-headed war. But now, as you point out, and I think it goes back to my original point about the fundamental fairness of the American people, if they understand the issues, people are beginning to get it, and the support or the opposition to the war now has grown, as you suggest, to a vast majority, or I don't know vast, but a majority of the people opposing not only the ongoing war, but opposing, but expressing their opposition to the reasons for having gotten into it in the first place, expressing their understanding that they were misled by the leadership of this country.
But yet and still, we still see components of the major media out here still not reporting the story. I looked at in the USA Today, there's a teeny tiny paragraph on A11 that says that, oh, yeah, the report came out, and no, there weren't any weapons of mass destruction. We're ending this search, and there never were any weapons of mass destruction.
Right.
You know, why is that a teeny tiny paragraph on page A11?
You're quite right. It's just awful that they have sort of, some of them have dropped the ball, probably unintentionally, some of them out of fear, and some of them because they're dominated by forces that that frankly don't want to call attention to the lies and the mishandling of this thing by the administration.
And Mike, when you what made you decide to take the position against the war? How did that happen?
Well, I mean, it just seemed to me to be the most illogical thing in the world and inappropriate as well. I've been I guess one would call a peace activist for a long time, and I'm not, having served in the military, I'm not one who believes, frankly, that there are no circumstances in which one should not take up arms in defense of one's country. But I saw no salt on our country. I saw, despite what people say about 9/11, the Iraqis weren't involved in 9/11, and the idea that the Bush administration could simply divert people's fear and hostility and anger and rage and confusion as a result of the 9/11 attacks into waging a war on a country that was really not involved in it at all was a horrifying idea to me. And when I saw the buildup of this fusillade of information that was coming out of the White House saying, you know, Saddam Hussein, this evil monster, and his connection with Al Qaeda.
He killed my daddy. He wanted to kill my daddy.
Yeah, that's right. I really became alarmed and was talking to some friends, and one of whom said, was not only agreeing with me, but he was saying, you know, where's the leadership? We don't see any leadership in a developing anti-war movement. So we decided that while there was some, it really wasn't getting much media coverage, and the way we could help this community, because the people in our community do tend to be media magnets, was to try to arrange an organization, build an organization here, draft a statement, and launch a campaign against the war, which we did with an organization we called Artists United to Win Without War. And it it sort of broke through what I saw as the media curtain, this kind of media drumbeat that was acting as a cheerleader for the White House and simply repeating everything the White House said as though it was fact without investigating whether it was true or not.
And were you surprised in the beginning of the hostility that was directed at you and others of us out here that were opposed to the war?
Well, yes and no. I mean, I was certainly surprised at the venom and at the personal nature of it and at the viciousness of it, but on the other hand, having gone through this over years with the death penalty, I saw that there are people who have a vested interest in maintaining a certain political position, and they are willing to do anything in order to undercut the credibility of anybody who stands up and poses a threat to their view.
But it was different than what you had experienced before.
It was different in terms of its focus and in terms of the extraordinary velocity and power of it. Yeah, it was quite different.
And give us an example of something that was different.
Well, I helped draft a statement. I'm an officer at the Screen Actors Guild, our union out here, and I helped draft a statement because some of the actors that had taken this position that I had asked them to were being excoriated on television and on the radio and in the newspapers for being traitors. I helped draft a statement at the Screen Actors Guild saying that we opposed the idea of anybody being attacked for having stated a political position that might or might not be popular. And there was a barrage of emails, telegrams, letters, and phone calls to the Screen Actors Guild once we released that statement. Interestingly, almost all of them saying exactly the same thing.
Orchestrated.
So when I do talk radio shows about the war and my opposition to it, people would call up and they would say exactly the same words. And you begin to get the idea that there is this, somewhere there is this basic source of information, and it is being spread across the channels of communication to people who just pick it up and regurgitate it without any understanding of its truth or falsity. They just pick it up and regurgitate it, and you are dealing with a kind of machine that is very powerful, but is also very dedicated to the opposition of your position and the support for the, in this case, the administration.
So which is more concerning, which is more troubling, if there were all of these actual individuals out there that felt this way, or that there's this machine out there?
Well, clearly, the I would be much more worried if it turned out to be, you know, the actual reaction, thoughtful reaction of the people that this opposition was coming from. But in fact, it wasn't. It was this machine that was cranking up people and inspiring them to have fear, just as was the case with the death penalty. Inspiring people to be afraid so that out of their fear they will respond in opposition to your view. In this case, they were, you know, dredging up 9/11, and they were dredging up the idea of terrorist attacks, and that nobody wants terrorist attacks, and how can those people, those of us who were speaking out against the war, be on the side of the terrorists? You know, you're either with us or you're with the terrorists, that kind of dualistic thinking that Mr. Bush is so famous for.
We're going to take another break, folks. We're talking to Mike Farrell. You know him from MASH. He's also an activist against the death penalty and also an activist against the war. This is Liz Brown. This is The Wake Up Call. And we have much, much, much more to talk about. Stay with us, folks.
Stick around for more of the best of The Wake Up Call. What's up next? We'll take another look at your news, traffic, and weather in the top of the 10 o'clock hour. Then it's Head Thumping Talk Radio with Brett Rosen.
About Golden Grocer Natural Market? It's locally owned and operated for over 30 years and serving and meeting your health needs by ensuring the best quality and selection in vitamin supplements and organic groceries. Golden Grocer Natural Market has the largest loose herb selection around. You can also get your grains and natural beauty items as well. Their staff is friendly, knowledgeable, and committed to helping you on your journey to improved and enhanced health. Golden Grocer believes that the healthiest goal is achieving balance in every area of your life. So, live your life like it's golden, and let Golden Grocer help you along the way. Golden Grocer, Natural Market, 335 North Euclid, right there in the Central West End. Open 10 a.m. to 7 p.m., Monday through Saturday, and Sunday 12 to 5. Golden Grocer, 367-0405. That's 367-0405.
This is Dr. Laura Schlesinger. Join me weekday afternoons from 2 to 4 on AM 920. WGNU discusses the issues that matter most to you every day. And if you have a relationship problem with a friend, coworker, or family member, it really matters to me. So call me at 1-800-DR-LAURA. That's 1-800-DRLAURA. Tune in every Monday through Friday afternoon from 2 until 4 and Take on the day with me, Dr. Laura, on AM 920 WGNU.
Time Life presents the complete 10 CD Classic Soul Ballads Collection. 144 sensual ballads. Luther Vandross, Al Green, Barry White, Aretha Franklin. Just to be close to you. And now, for the first time ever, you can check out the entire 10 CD collection for 30 days for just $9.95. But wait, when you order with your credit card, you'll get free shipping and handling. That's a savings of nearly $13. So order with your credit card, and for just $9.95, you can enjoy all 10 CDs of classic soul ballads in your home. And we'll ship it to you free. If it's not the best collection you've ever heard, send it back and owe nothing more.
Call 1-800-313-6969. That's 1-800-313-6969. 1-800-313-6969.
Are you one of those people who look at somebody who's big boned and think that's just a euphemism for Twinkie enriched? Are you sick of the idea that we can go to war in Serbia and bomb the crud out of them, but we should stay out of Iraq? If the whole entire pop culture thing, Britney Spears, Super Bowl commercials, and all that stuff gets on your nerves, well, guess what? It gets on mine, too. So if you want someone to listen and understand, listen to me, Brett Rosen, every Tuesday, 10 a.m. on WGNU, 920 a.m.
What you need to know, when you need to know it. The award-winning Wake-Up Call with Liz Brown.
Now we take you back to the best of Liz Brown. Liz will be in the studio beginning at 6 a.m. tomorrow morning. Until then, more of the best of the Wake-Up Call, then your ABC News, local news, and your weather, and then it's head-thumping talk radio with Brett Rosen himself. That's on the way. This is AM 920 WGNU.
Come away with me. Come away where they can't tempt us with their lies.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the Wake Up Call. This is Liz Brown. I am talking to activist, actor, and citizen Mike Farrell, joining us from Southern California. Mike, welcome back. Mike, can you talk to us about the organizations that you have formed? Because there are a number of them, the death penalty, as well as those that are committed to bringing information about the invasion in Iraq.
Sure. The only one actually I formed or helped form was Artists United to Win Without War, but we were part of the Win Without War Coalition, which continues to exist around the country. And there are any number of organizations on with regard to the war that are continuing to act. There's a new organization, Iraq Veterans Against the War.
And I've had them on the show.
Oh, good.
Yes.
Great.
Mm-hmm.
And you know then about Military Families Speak Out. And
absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely.
I was not actually part of the formation of Death Penalty Focus, the organization I now chair, but I was at one of the early meetings and have been involved with the organization since its inception in the late 80s. And I was have been an ongoing member of the board, or board of advisors, I guess, for the National Coalition to Abolish the Death Penalty. And I was helping to respond to build the what became the California Committee of Human Rights Watch, which Human Rights Watch, as you probably know, is the world's largest American-based human rights organization. And I've been involved with the, I was actually co-chair of Human Rights Watch for 11 years, Human Rights Watch in California. So I've, you know, and I'm a member of a lot of organizations and supporter of them, but in terms of starting them, I don't often do that, but in the case of the Iraq War, it was just something that had to be done.
And when we talk about the Iraq War, there are just so many different levels and so many different components and so many different ways to talk about the wrongness of this invasion. But can you speak to us in terms of your, if you could prioritize your concerns about this war or this invasion, what would you say is number one for you?
Well, the ongoing death and destruction is hideous, and I recognize, as do many people, that a part of it at least has to do with the insurgency there. It's not just all Americans creating the killing, but I think people need to understand that the American presence is now the inciting incident, if you will, and that without the American presence there, if the American troops were to be withdrawn, from my perspective, two things would happen. One, our people would stop being killed, and second, our people would stop killing Iraqis, innocent Iraqi civilians. In most instances, that is what troubled everybody. But three, it would stop the corrosive impact on the people of Iraq that believe they are now not being liberated, if they ever did believe that, but are being occupied by a foreign force that is there not for their benefit, but to exploit their oil and to exploit their nation. If you simply withdrew the American forces and replaced them with an international peacekeeping force under the aegis of the United Nations, hopefully made up in large part of Middle Eastern people who were more sympathetic and more understanding of the culture in the region.
And more knowledgeable.
And certainly more knowledgeable. Then you would have a cessation, it seems to me, of a considerable part of the violence. Now, there will certainly, I'm not naive about it, there will continue to be violence there because we have loosed this terrible beast of factionalization, and you've got the inherent difficulties and differences between the Kurds and the Shia and the Sunni, but I don't think those are incapable of resolution, and it seems to me that those people are capable of resolving their problems for themselves. You're going to be no more successful, or we're going to be no more successful at trying to keep down the problems there by the use of force than we were in instilling democracy at the point of a gun. It just simply is inconsistent with the reality.
And one of the components to your organization is that the idea that you oppose the doctrine of unilateral military preemption. Why is that so important?
Well, for a number of reasons. One is we become, if we continue to believe, as Mr. Bush seems to insist on writing into our construct, we continue to believe that we have the right to simply go anywhere and do anything because we have the power to do it. That one sets the stage for another powerful nation to simply do the same thing, or another less powerful nation in the case of the ongoing tension between India and Pakistan, or the ongoing tension between North and South Korea, or the ongoing tension in any number of parts of the world. It flies directly in the face of the whole concept of a civilized community of nations that is trying to find a way to work out its problems peacefully under the aegis of an international organization. I happen to be a great supporter of the UN. I think the UN has made some errors in the past.
But like every organization.
Like every organization. But I think with the goodwill and the support of the powerful nations of the world, the United Nations could be a wonderful, wonderful organization to lead us toward a peaceful world.
And also on the other side of that is, yeah, other countries could do it, but if we continue this practice, I think in some respects set up by George W. Bush's father when he snatched Noriega from his country and brought him here, we as a nation will begin to justify going into other countries preemptively stop it now.
I mean, we've done that on the micro level for a long time. You know, we have this policy now, they call it rendition,
yes,
where we can send people that we don't like into some nation where they can be tortured. But for a long time we've had the reverse, and it's been sort of sniffed at, and nobody's paid much attention to it, where intelligence forces or police forces from the United States can go out into the world and snatch somebody that we think is a criminal and bring that person back and do what those people determine as justice to that person, instead of using the international offices of the International Criminal Court, for example. We have a tendency to arrogate to ourselves, because we have the power to do it, the right to do things. And what that creates is a fascist state, and that's not the America I want to be part of.
Mike Farrell, thank you so much for joining us on the Wake Up Call. We really appreciate you getting up and talking to us.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity.
My pleasure.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Listen, folks, this is Liz Brown, the Wake Up Call. I will be back. We will be back. Same time, same place tomorrow.
You've been listening to the best of the Wake Up Call. Stick around for ABC News, your local news and weather, and then it's Head Thumping Talk Radio with Brett Rosen himself. That's on the way. This is AM 920 WGMU.
It's AM 920 WGNU, Granite City, St. Louis.
Here's the latest from ABC News. I'm Karen Chase. A progress report due out this week on the war in Iraq is expected to put more pressure on the president to change course, ABC's Steve Taylor reports.
White House Press Secretary Tony Snow said the report shows the Iraqi government missing some goals and meeting others. And on ABC's Good Morning America, Snow looked at the areas of failure as opportunities.
The benchmarks should not be a benchmark for trying to figure out how to get out of Iraq without success. They should be benchmarks for succeeding in Iraq.
This is a war, Snow said, not a political game. Steve Taylor, ABC News, Washington.
Louisiana Senator David Vitter admits he's been busted after his phone number popped up in the so-called DC Madam's business records.